Just took off my hoodie. Welcome back to the Periodical Podcast. With me is Matthew Lichtenstatter. I'm Thomas Krulikowski. I think this one's on tape.
Yes. Why hockey? We're going to tell you why. You might have seen a podcast from us last week. It was up for maybe 50 minutes. And then I edit these things. I looked at it. Everything looked good. And then I listened back to a bit of it and I went, oh, crap. Editing snafus and audio snafus. And because of the way this podcast is recorded and the way that Tommy and I like to do our shows, they're very much stream of consciousness, not necessarily things that you can easily edit without making the podcast sound odd. So we both made an executive decision to fall on our sword and do it again. Problem being, we both had scheduling conflicts last week when we were planning on doing it again, so we are now recording this a week later than the original show. But it is fine, because now there is actually news that we can get to related to some of the things that we want to talk about. As much as I loved some of the running jokes from the last show, I don't remember which ones they were. So maybe if I remember, we'll bring it up in the midst of random conversation, as we usually do in this podcast, because it is just a complete stream of consciousness. Now, I do want to start, because we're recording this today, that the Panthers have officially announced their coaching staff. There are no surprises in it. We talked about it on the show you'll never hear, or maybe some of you heard, but you couldn't listen to the whole thing because it was like an hour and 40 minutes and it was only up for maybe 50. But the coaching staff's not a surprise. Andrew Brunette's on it. We talked about him. He was an assistant coach with the Wild a couple years ago. Then he moved up to the front office. Mike Kitchen's there because he's always on Joel Quenneville's right side or wherever he stands on the bench. But if you are a Florida Panthers player that is gritty, that is tough, that's very Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu, the kind of people that they want to associate with, but they're not, you know, the superstars, you know what I mean? You are now officially going to get a job with the Panthers when you retire. Like last year, Derek McKenzie was a coach, in air quotes, and he's now technically an assistant coach. So if you look at the Panthers directory, he's going to be an assistant coach. But I have no idea where he's going to be, because normally there's only two people on the bench. So I guess he's going to be an assistant coach in the press box. I mean, that's basically what he was doing last year. But that's the only thing I can think of.
I think they spent all their coaching budget on Kitchens and Q. I mean, because Kitchens is probably a million plus, right? You know, he's been a long time assistant and has a lot of success. So obviously he's at least pushing a million. If what's it like, Mike Yeo is a million, and who's the other assistant coach at the Flyer sign?
Michelle Terry.
Right. Yeah. They're all like million plus assistant coaches.
Well,
so
when you can pour from the well from Comcast as opposed to pouring from the well from the Panthers.
Right.
I mean,
it helps when, you know, the charity serve the payment, it's kind of prepaid with when you think about McKenzie's last few contracts with the Panthers and how much money he got there. So, you know, he's kind of breaking in into a new career, and, you know, we all knew it was going to happen.
Yes. Once it happened with Thornton, you kind of figured it's going to happen with Derek McKenzie. You know what this means, Tommy? I know you're going to love me when I say this. Your next Panthers, you know, ambassador marketing dude is going to be Troy Brower.
Yeah. I mean, he was training with Matheson and Barkov with Max Ivanov, the skills coach that they were using. And you probably saw on social media, if you're into that, if you're following Barkov and Matheson and all that stuff. So he's probably getting yeah. I mean, and like one or two is fine. It's just the constant overflow, and how many are every year and how many just stick around. I wish we had an abundance of top four left-handed defensemen at the moment that we were just kicking around, staying around.
Nope.
Instead we got grinders. Yeah, but you know, it's not like Thornton's really done any damage or has done anything really too much, too little, or whatever. And in the front office,
I think he enjoys his role.
You know, I think it's likely that Derek McKenzie is a better coach than he was a hockey player. And all things considered,
that before I thought I've heard people say Derek McKenzie could be a pretty decent coach.
Yeah, and all things considered, right? These types of players do turn into pretty good coaches. I mean they also turn into bad coaches
final,
too.
Potentially winning coach could be Craig Berube. So,
right, yeah, but you know,
well, he also could turn into decent analysts. Like, right. Bill Lynch is a great analyst. He was a fourth line player in his career.
Yeah, and if he's a better coach than player, I mean, all things considered, he was a good player relative to how many people pick up a hockey stick, play hockey, and don't come close to that
I mean,
level.
if you're a
So,
top 100 hockey player,
well, you know,
which he
we'll
might have
see.
been at one point.
It's just another piece of evidence into the growing library of evidence that, you know, our predictions are pretty spot on. Because I'm pretty sure I remember O'Brien, me, and even you, you know, every contract, like, this guy's just going to be here forever. He's going to get a coaching gig like a year. The year he retires, they're going to pull the Willie Mitchell on him or something, or the Scotty Upshaw. And sure enough, they did. And
technically, he was a coach last year, for what that's worth.
Right. And, you know, that's fine.
I mean, he was
as long as long as he's
for
not,
a time in the National Hockey League. So,
well,
you're a
I don't want to say he was good. He was a good center in the AHL. He wasn't a liability for some of his career in the NHL. Is probably
we're
the best.
Charitable here today, aren't we?
I mean, but that's just the best it gets for Derek McKenzie. But there's nothing wrong with that. How many people would not give up their jobs and lives and everything to have that? No matter how many, you know,
well,
maybe
the other Panthers' coach is Andrew Burnett, who was also, you know, a fourth line grinder for most of his
a
career.
Little better of a player, a little
tiny bit. I mean,
relatively
speaking.
No, I'm pulling up. I think Andrew Brunette probably has more NHL points than McKenzie has NHL games. But then McKenzie has NHL games.
Yeah, let me see. I'm going to use our old friend Wikipedia to figure this out.
Okay, so
his NHL total, he played 1,110 games. That's a lot.
Yeah, and 733 points. And there's no way McKenzie...
Oh, there's no way that I didn't even think that Andrew Brunette was that good.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's, you know...
Boy, I mean, it must have been a
when you're thinking... When Derek McKenzie's telling you something, it's one
NHL
thing.
NHL games, 125 points. As what
yep.
I say.
So, yeah, like I said, Brunette has more points than games played by Derek McKenzie. Take that for what you will. Doesn't mean anything. Unless you
come back.
Yeah, which wouldn't have, you know, been bad. And obviously, I don't have anything wrong with Brunette or the coaching staff's fine. I got Q. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, I think it's basically what we expected, and it's Joel Quenneville.
For.
Did I ever say? I mean, I said it on the old recording. I'll say it again here. I don't think I ever put it out on Twitter. When I was down in Florida the first time recently for work-related purposes, and I was watching, I think it was Bruins-Leafs Game 5 or Game 6, and during that game, the Panthers had an ad up with Joel Quenneville with the same logo they've been using on Twitter with the song, Every Day I'm Hustlin'. Now that is going to go up as one of the best Florida Panthers ads ever, next to that random ad from 95-96 with Radek Dvorak, which they showed at one point. I can't remember when it was. You probably will be able to find it on Twitter. I think Randy Moeller was in it, too. It was hilarious. So, sometimes they do have good TV presence.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just...
Every day I'm hustling being used.
It's like their other hockey decisions. You know, it's sometimes they can really surprise you, but it's got to be more consistent. And same
TV
with their
ads. I saw billboards in Broward County. They're promoting it, and I have heard... from some people.
But what happens when they hit that first bump of resistance? That's the big thing, because usually when that happens, the downward spiral starts, and it usually happens in October or September or even August some years when they hit that first stumbling block, whether it's a stupid trade like Bolin to Arizona before the season that, you know, or, you know, there's just like a lot of them that they do something stupid and they just lose all momentum. They can't pick it up until, you know, at least – the trade deadline or something before they, yeah. So it's, can they just keep making good or at least not harmful decisions?
Well, you know, there is one thing about that I've always wanted to mention on the show, and I don't know if I've ever mentioned it before. You know, the gold plan, right? The drafting plan where once you get eliminated from the playoffs, the points you accumulate leads to draft picks or whatever it is. It's a terrible idea. But the only good thing about the gold plan is the Panthers would win every year because they're always spectacular when they're eliminated and they have nothing to play for.
Right, yeah. It would be it'd be a pretty good formula for them. We'd be talking about, you know, Kaapo Kakko later as a potential Panther instead of, you know, like Patrick Laine. But, you know, either or.
Oh, yeah. Boy. One other thing about the Panthers that we want to mention is we're only like 2 weeks away from the draft. It's crazy. You know, they signed Rodrigo Abels, Latvian forward. And it was funny because we always joke about how the Panthers cannot sign anybody from Sweden. You know, they don't like Swedes. But now they've signed somebody from the Swedish Hockey League. It's amazing.
Getting close. I mean, he might be Latvian, but they aren't too bad anymore.
We know what happens. If he has like 10 NHL points in 15 games, the entire country of Latvia will vote him in as an All-Star Game starter.
Yeah, and make a rap song about him.
Yes. Did that actually happen about Zemgus Girgensons?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I missed that.
I mean, the chorus is pretty much just his name.
One of the years in that All-Star game. That was the Columbus year.
Yeah.
That whole All-Star game starter list was all Blackhawks and Zemgus Girgensons.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
They really didn't understand internet voting back then.
No. Well,
that's pretty much the...
Do you think the NHL actually understands the internet?
No.
I mean, Colin Campbell, I don't know if he even has the ability to get off of dial-up yet.
If they understand it, you know, they understand a lot of things and choose to ignore it, like CTE. So,
or the
it could
LGBT
be willful
community.
Yeah, it could be willful ignorance.
Well, I don't know if it's willful ignorance ignoring the internet, but I mean, maybe it's just like, you know, Gary Bettman's old, Colin Campbell's older, you know.
Is a colon.
Colin Campbell probably still uses, as I said, he probably still uses dial-up. But anyway, the point is with Abels is, you always want to take flyers on players like this, whether he's a first-line player for Springfield or whether he somehow makes the bottom six. He's a flyer. If he doesn't work out, there's no risk. If he does work out, you found somebody in for nothing.
It's fine, but it's not the flyers that I want them taking. I mean, we've seen a lot of UFA defensemen of around the same age that are lefties and could be of something being signed. We've seen some better forwards being signed or still out there that are either, you know, undrafted and aged out of the draft or have been drafted and you know, are in their later 20s coming back over, which would have more of an impact. I mean, this is basically a Maxim Malmin, Henrik Hoppel replacement, some guy who, you know, is going to be a tweener and probably be used and abused and tossed back to Europe in 18 months or so.
Well, do you know what's the best part about this is? Do you know who drafted him?
Oh, Vancouver. Because, yeah. I mean, if it's either some fucking, like, Vancouver 7th-round pick, somebody who, like, was 20 years old and put up a lot of goals finally in the WHL, or, like, someone straight out of Tempe is, like, junior C-League, or we don't sign him.
Yeah, well, perhaps. Well, I mean, again, if Jari Kekalainen said, go out and sign this guy, you can't say no to that, but, again,
yeah,
it's either the Blackhawks or the Canucks. It's one of the two with the Panthers.
I don't think I'm not expecting much of him, and I'm expecting more signings that are of better quality from this team, and I hope they do that. They have a lot of time. I hope this is just some random step. This is just some weird. This doesn't really. I hope this doesn't really identify a pattern or anything or speak to a process. I think this is, you know, hopefully just – it is what it is because, yeah, I mean, he's not even
– player that was signed by one of the teams this year that you were like, oh, I would have liked the Panthers to have signed him because, you know, they all kind of just blend in. You know what I mean? But if there was
Oliver Kulaski or whatever his name was. Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if that would have been an issue, but he was definitely one. There was another Finn, I think, who signed with Chicago or somebody like that. Or was it Montreal?
I don't know who it was. I'm just looking at all these players. I can't tell. Like,
let me pull up Cat.
I've seen the Stars sign a couple of them. Obviously, the Leafs sign Mikiev or whatever his name is.
Yeah, and like... Obviously, the big signings are Bob and Panarin to kind of keep this thing moving. And at this point, it would seem like a big mistake if Florida didn't sign at least one of Bob and Panarin. And I know a lot of people think Bobrovsky is the more important one. We've talked about this before. I'd say Panarin's the more important one. You look at
100% agree with you. It's
because he's the least likely to be a risk at the contract level, et cetera, to have a better performance through the contract. It's easier to be consistent as a forward when you're just a scorer and everything. He's kind of everything. And Florida really needs more 5-on-5 scoring outside and even more power play options outside, you know, just a handful of guys. And even though Panarin would be the second, maybe the third best forward on the team, it pushes guys down. It gives Frank Vetrano the ability to keep that momentum going and get those easy third line minutes. And you put him with a guy like Tippett or Borgstrom and maybe a vet or something like that, and you can get a really good third line. You can push Malgin to fourth line center. And
you give Vincent Trocheck an actual winger.
Yeah. 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 I mean, there's a lot of good reasons for it. And when you think about Bobrovsky, yeah, that'd be great. He's probably one of the few goalie options. And that's probably the biggest selling point is, he's the best and one of the only real starting options that can win you a playoff series right now.
Now he's actually proven that he can. Because we talked about this before the playoffs, and we all thought that the Blue Jackets were going to get steamrolled, and they didn't. And Bobrovsky was good this postseason. And that's the first time he's been good this postseason. That was one of my big concerns, was he's been great in the regular season, but when you hire Joel Quenneville, getting there doesn't matter so much as now you got to win something. And I didn't think Bobrovsky was a goalie at the time that could win you a playoff series. Now, he's only won one, but he did at least prove this postseason that with a good enough team in front of him, and with Joel Quenneville, you'd expect the Panthers to be good enough in front of him to get there at least, that he can win a playoff series. But as I said, if you're signing him for 7 years and $10 million, it's a lot of money you're tying up, and I know the cap's going to go up. I know you think there's going to be a lockout and there's going to be compliance buyouts. We'll see what happens down the line with that. But if I had to pick between the two, give me Panarin and have the Panthers win every game 6-4. Because if you put Panarin on the top line with Barkov and Huberdeau, I don't know how that isn't the best line in hockey. Instantly.
Right. I agree. And
that would be just a wrecking ball of destruction and beauty.
The way the market is for goalies and even defensemen, which we'll be talking about in a few seconds with the Panthers, is, you know, it's easier to find someone that's not at the top end of the pay scale, that's not at, you know, the top end of popularity and demand on the market in net that can get you a cup or can get you competitive. And, you know, I think there's more options in net. There's a couple 20, 21-year-old guys in this draft right now that they could get for free in the third or fourth round. They have three fourth-round picks, right? That you get them and they maybe get Varlamov, and if you improve your D, you get, you know, a new partner for Ekblad, and you're banking on Q in the system helping that, and maybe you pick up another guy for the third pair or to be a depth option just in case to weigh it out, and you know, with that offense punch with Panarin and however you do that, or whoever you'd get. I mean, we can talk about Patrick Laine apparently wanting out of Winnipeg, which there's an automatic tie in there. Yeah, that actually seems to be a thing, at least, you know, starting to be a thing. I don't know how much you want to trust the rumors this early in the summer.
But you know,
I'll say this. That's a person that I
– Can you imagine Laine playing together?
Laine is the type of player – like William Nylander, that would make these demands, would force a trade right off his ELC, et cetera, would take an offer and would hold out. Right, yeah. So, like, there's a few other options up front, but I think Panarin's the one that costs you the least, is the most likely to happen. And to be fair, as much as I like Laine, there's a lot besides scoring that needs work. Duchesne, whoever you want to get, Marner, etc. Panarin, yeah, Panarin's the guy who's plug-in, can do it all himself, doesn't really need much coaching, and the coaching that he would need, he already has a relationship with Q. Like, it's just kind of the perfect storm.
And he's playing with a Russian on his line, and he's playing with one of the best playmaking centers in the game. I mean, as I said, he was dominant when he was playing on a line with, what was it, Kane and Anisimov. And, you know, Artem Anisimov is what he is. I think that was the line that was, like, so great for Chicago the year that he won the Calder.
Right.
But now, I mean, you put him on a line with Barkov, and you could put anyone on his wing. You could even put our old friend Seth Griffith on his wing, and they would score a trillion goals. I mean, yeah. You put Huberto on the wing, and you're set. The other thing, of course, with goaltending.
Bob, you know, and if signing Bob to a contract you kind of feel a little uneasy about is a way to get Panarin, you kind of do that too. I mean, Panarin, I don't want to overhype him, but Panarin's definitely the type of guy where it's the fit, the moment, everything's kind of coming together, and you can push all in on him. He definitely has the skill level. He definitely has the work ethic.
We talked about it. Like, you've got a three-year window when Barkov's making 5.9 to win the Cup.
Right, right. And you know, this is when Tom Rowe should have been at the table saying, you know, we're entering our window is right now, not 5 years
when
ago.
When they thought they were entering their three-year window. The other thing about goaltending is we don't know how good Montembeault is. I think he could be good. There's still a lot that he obviously has to work on, and I have said you put a better defensive system in front of him, and we, again, presume you're going to get that with Joel Quenneville from the start, and obviously you have to improve the D. But Montembeault is, I mean, he's not the starter, but if Jordan Binnington could take you to Stanley Cup final, if the Carolina Hurricanes could get to where they got with Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhinney, right? Like, goaltending is voodoo. You don't necessarily need to pay $1 trillion for a guy like Bob. I've been on the, you sign Varlamov to a three-year deal worth maybe like 5.5 or something like this. You give Montembeault the backup job, and if Montembeault takes over Varlamov's spot, then you're fine, because then you could easily get rid of Varlamov to the Seattle Easter Eggs. This is my theory, and I've been a proponent of that. Whether it happens or not, who knows? Of course, you know, George Richards actually went and hunted down Bobrovsky and Panarin when they were vacationing in South Beach, and the most George Richards thing in the history of George Richards. Loved reading that story about, like, what are they going to do? We're going to find out. We're not too far away from finding it out. If I had to guess, I still think Bobrovsky is more likely than Panarin, because I think Panarin has more options. I think that it's very
likely. What are his options? His options are where he wants to go, which seems to be two places.
Well, he wants to be in a big city and near water. The Kings are going to be garbage, and they don't have cap space. The only team that I say you have to fear is the Rangers. And the Rangers have a legitimate reason to sign him. And the Rangers could get, like, insta-good overnight if they sign Panarin and they bring Kako in, and you're now looking like, oh, crap, the Rangers are really good. But that's the only team that I legit fear. With Bobrovsky, I don't think there's any other team that would legitimately sign him. And you go like, oh. And I saw a rumor that maybe the Sharks would be interested. No idea why they'd do that. I know Martin Jones has been terrible, but you could upgrade your goaltending cheaper than that. I mean, I saw the Islanders, but last year they turned Robin Lehner and Thomas Greiss into being great. So I don't think that makes sense. It's always looked like Bob and the Panthers had the fit. And maybe when you think about that coming in and the tax things with Florida and him wanting to play under, you know, less pressure, maybe that means the cap hit goes down and you're not killing yourself 4 years down the line when Bobrovsky's not good anymore. But that's always seemed more likely. But if you get Bob and Panarin, and there's still absolutely a chance that they do, you're looking at a team next year that goes instantly like, oh, they can win the Cup. And, I mean, for the Panthers, that's not something we've said in 25 years, basically. So you can't really complain about that.
I don't think that they can win a cup until they get a partner for Ekblad. I think Ekblad's too important. I also think that their left-handed defensemen are too shit.
So
I mean,
let's go into that now, because that is another point. I've made a point that the Panthers need to upgrade the bottom six. That's something that kind of happens in time, and if you sign Panarin, you upgrade the bottom six by default.
I don't think anyone at this point is saying that the bottom six doesn't need to be upgraded, but I think people are underestimating how much work also needs to be done on that second line, if not mainly because of Trocheck.
Well, the one thing I'll say on Trocheck before we get to D is last year he was bad. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. He was bad, and he was injured, and it was a terrible injury, but even before he was injured, he was not playing well. And that was a rough season for Vincent Trocheck. Now, we know he can play better. We've seen him play better. But I want to see what Joel Quenneville can do with him. Like, what kind of things does he tell Vincent Trocheck to do with his game? Because we have seen times when Vincent Trocheck, you know, he gets it in his head. He's a very headstrong, you know, tough-as-nails kind of guy. right? But then sometimes he could try to do it all himself, and that creates a problem, and he could sometimes get caught running around a bit. I want to see what he does with Trocheck, because you have to now ask a couple of questions about him. He's got, you know, 3 years left. If it doesn't work out at center, are we going to see the another Tommy Kulikowski prediction? Do you move him to the wing? Which is something that I think maybe we see at some point, although I doubt it at the moment. But could we see it at some point?
I think, yeah. I think you're pretty much – Trocheck's future in Florida is depending on him moving to wing. I mean, I don't see him making it past the expansion draft and all of that if he wants to be a 2C, because at that point – I think it's going to be pretty unlikely. Hepo Niemi could still be a center. Borgstrom? I don't think it's, yeah. And then, the obvious one's Borgstrom. I don't think it's out of the question that Florida doesn't take a decent center at 13 overall in this draft.
They shouldn't, but it's possible that they do.
I mean, you can never take too many centers. I don't think you can ever have too many centers. You can never have too many centers. You can never have too many kind of dynamic D, I guess, is the best way to say it.
So let's focus on D, and then we'll get to the draft, because I know that's one of your things, right? And this is Tommy time. Well, but let's go to D, because we've talked a lot this year about how Aaron Ekblad actually had a really good year. It just didn't look like it because he was asked to do far too much, which is always what happens.
Yeah, he had a good year breaking up plays, breaking up zone entries.
If you look at some of the stats, like if you go to Evolving Hockey and you look at the RAPM stuff and you look at his goals above replacement, he's one of the best on the team. He's like two or three on the team. He had a really underrated great season, and he wasn't even playing first power play. So he's really taking a big step forward, right? We talked about after that awful year a couple years ago with the concussions, like, is he going to really become Aaron Ekblad? I know people say, oh, he's not actually a number one D. You look at some of the things that he was doing and what he's been asked to do, he was playing like a number one D. He needs a partner, though, that can make him really be what we know Aaron Ekblad can be. Like, when he was with Brian Campbell, remember, he won the Calder and he was great. Brian Campbell turned out to be the perfect partner for him, the way that Campbell played, the way that he didn't want to have the puck all the time, and, you know, the way that he would let Aaron Ekblad do what he does.
And they haven't really put much thought into his partner since.
No, because it's been Keith Yandel. And Keith Yandel does not work with Aaron Ekblad. And Mike Matheson also does not work with Aaron Ekblad.
Right. And at this point, I don't see how you can go into the season expecting Yandel. Well, I guess your only way you can go into the season with Yandel as Ekblad's partner is if Quinville is just so attached to the idea of, I don't want to upset Ekblad's partner out the gate, which I think is just a stupid reasoning, blah, blah, blah. But obviously, if Q comes in, right, exactly. But, you know, obviously that'd be the one reason.
Roster in the last 2 months and said, you know what, we need another guy here. And we've heard rumors from the Panthers that said they're looking for another guy.
Right. But where do they keep saying, and I don't know if this is just because everyone's looking for right-handed defensemen or what, but, you know, Richards have said it and Talon said it. I haven't heard Quinville say anything different, is that it's a right-handed defenseman they're looking at. And if they're looking at a right-handed defenseman, what's that mean? They're looking at somebody for Yandel, somebody for Matheson on that second pair, whoever it's going to be, and not for Ekblad. And now, if you're looking for someone on the second pair for Yandel, that's fine. I mean, I think Yandel needs a new partner, and maybe that's not Mackenzie Weegar, but your two best defensemen are right-handers. Why are you trying to stuff another one there? And you have a guy, you have a couple lefties who can play right, and you have a couple other righties who aren't too bad either. I don't understand why they need to throw another right-handed into the mix, whether it's Jacob Trouba, whether it's anything. That's a cap hit.
Okay with Trouba? Because I mean,
I would be okay with Trouba, but the issue with Trouba is money. And I'm not paying that type of money for someone to fill in under Ekblad, where, you know, Uyghur's already on the fence of being that good. Well, not as good as Trouba, but Uyghur is a is on the fence of being a second pair defenseman possibly, or at least
He's a
doing it
pair.
enough.
I mean, I've really been pleased with Mackenzie Weegar and his
Right. And
development.
so
Of all of the Panthers, like 5'6", Josh Browns and the people of this nature, like Uyghur is the one that really rose up above the fray and has always found a way to differentiate himself because he is a little bit different than all the other Panthers defensemen.
he's at least waving his hand going, "Hey, I'm an everyday NHLer. You can play me every game
Well, the other thing that he
as long
does
as
that
I'm
we like
healthy."
is he's not as reliant on the puck as the Panthers' top 3D are. All of
Right.
the Panthers'
That's
top
a huge
3D
point.
are puck rushers. We've talked about this, and we'll say it every single
Puck
time.
hogs. Puck hogs is probably the best way to
Yeah.
describe Matheson and Yandle.
And
They need
Ekblad
the
doesn't
touches
need that. And
and
they need a Brian Campbell type, not like a guy who plays exactly like Brian Campbell because he is a very unique defenseman. But we've said, what kind of defensemen are out there? We've said Carolina. They can't keep all that they have. One of Pesce or Slavin would go, and I've said if you do the Pesce or Slavin for a Hoffman type trade, people would say, why are you trading Mike Hoffman? But if you traded Hoffman and you signed Panarin, you're not losing anything in terms of goals, and you've just upgraded your D in a major way. You've given that balance to the D pairings that you desperately need, and Slavin and Pesce have been so good for Carolina. They're dealing from a place of surplus. The Panthers are dealing from a place for surplus, and everybody's happy. We've also said the Flyers are dealing from a place of surplus with D. Philippe Myers has emerged, and
especially on the left-hand side
I
in
was
Philly.
watching the World Championship final against Finland, and every time I watched Philippe Myers, I'm going like, wow, he's really dang good. And so then you go, oh, well, they don't need some of the defensemen they have. You might think, oh, Shane Goss is spare, but he's like all the other D for the Panthers. And as great as it would be to have, kid from Broward County play for the Panthers who grew up a Panthers fan, you want a D more like Provorov if you could get him out. We talked about Shillington in Calgary. They've got extra D that they might be willing to move for more offense. Those are the kind of D that you need to balance out Aaron Ekblad and lesser extent Keith Yandle, of course, because he's very similar. But if you balance out your top pair and you give Aaron Ekblad that balance and you suddenly let Aaron Ekblad do Aaron Ekblad things, like he can actually drive the offense, he can be assertive. His defensive game has improved immensely since, even a couple of years ago. He's much better than he used to be. And he'll tell you he still has to improve in a lot of areas. But he can be a number one D. He just needs the partner to help him do that. And coaching, obviously, is going to be something of that. But those are the D that we're talking about. Are they going to get one
Yeah,
of
you
them? I don't
have.
know. But it certainly seems like you go to places where they have a surplus and they also have a need in the area the Panthers have extra, which is they have a few too many forwards. And with cap reasons, you might need to trade Hoffman. And that's not a slight against him. If he's an asset and he's got 1 year left on his deal, if you did something like that, you're not losing anything up front in terms of goals. You definitely have the options to replace him, and then you've just made your decor 1,000 times better. Because look at the Bruins and what they've been able to do with guys like Grzelcyk and Carlo. The Bruins only have one Ekblad Yandle type, and that's Charlie McAvoy. The rest of their D are not like that.
I don't
You know what I
know.
mean?
I've the way Grizzly's been playing the last 2 years, I think
But he's
that
not like
he's.
Mike Matheson. Like, they're different D.
Yeah. But
But,
I
Mike
think.
Matheson doesn't have what Matt Grizzlick's been doing this postseason in him, is what I'm
I
saying.
don't.
Like, that's not what
Well,
Mike
I
Matheson
think we
is.
have to. I think there's a rational look at this. It's you have Aaron Ekblad. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more years at 7.5 million. That's a huge investment in a player, and you can't afford to not address it. And then you have Matheson, who's got one, two,
Seven
three,
more years,
four, five,
4.875.
six. Yeah, crazy, right? That's a huge investment. And this is a defenseman, Matheson, whose last year's issues, self-described, were overthinking, mental, self-mistakes, just not being a good defenseman.
How
So
many times
you're
did
going
you
to tell
say
me.
last year, Matheson, please keep it so simple?
So Florida's plan is to start him in the top four. I don't, and possibly even first pair. That would be, I think, way too much. If you want to even recoup value on Matheson by getting his trade value up and trading him, you have to start him on the third line. You have to, and if you want Ekblad to hit those development goals and get back into, you know, maybe a Shea Weber type first pairing defenseman, which would be, you know, I'm not going to scoff at that. I take that. I want that. And he has the ability to do that. You have to give them a defenseman now. We're talking about this window. It takes a while for defensive pairings to go and everything. What happens if you go out and get a defenseman that doesn't work with Ekblad, or, you know, you need to start trying this early because you can't be waiting until the trade deadline every year. And because defensemen just don't move really at the trade deadline. When they do, they're Adam McQuaid's. They're not someone that's, you know, or it's, you know, the ghost of Paul Coffey.
I'm trying to think of what other D is available, because the four that we mentioned.
There's a lot. I mean, if you – Anaheim's going to be doing a lot of things with the roster, I think.
It's going to take
– Calgary probably needs Campus to do some Lindholm things with their
– As I said Shillington is
– Yeah, and then there's Rasmus Anderson. There's
yeah, he's good too.
I mean, and then there's – like, I think – the defensemen that people don't know are about to be good. And there's this draft. I mean, if we get, you know, we'll kind of back into the draft at some point, but the D market's much more wide open than I would say the goalie market or the forward market. If you know what you need in a defenseman, and it happens to be what the Panthers need, is a guy who's just good at getting pucks and giving them to his defenseman, just helping out, just not being a cog in the machine, just making the smart little play at the right time. You know, he doesn't have to be flashy. He doesn't have to be super skilled. Just
he's
someone
okay
who's
letting
small.
Other players, you know, take control right. of the play. And the Panthers just don't have that with their D. Yeah.
And
the good thing is they don't have Jack Capuano saying we want 150 points from the D now. Thank
you. Right. And, you know, you can find that, you know, Carolina, there's probably three names on Carolina that you'd look at. You know, Philadelphia probably has three or four that you'd look at. And same with Calgary and Anaheim and, you know, Nashville, obviously. There's Ekholm. There's, you know, there's.
And he even said, like, what if you sign an Anton Strahlman? Like, you give him a
right.
Maybe he might make a lot of money, but if you gave him something like that, I mean.
And he might be a little too old, and, you know, maybe
yeah,
that's.
You know what? Maybe having somebody like that on your blue line isn't going to kill you, because they're all of their D outside
well,
the
if
middle
you,
are pretty young.
Yeah, and if Strahlman or somebody like him would be a good get if you're, you know, you're dead set on getting some right-handed defenseman for Yandle, right? If you're so gun-ho about it, you can then,
I mean, if
you know,
gonna get left-handed D, I mean, by the way, the first, I mean, we are
there's
all
no
very
one
much,
really,
I'm still very much about if you can sign Erik Karlsson, do it, but I highly doubt that they can. So, you know, there's that. Here's the thing that they should not do. Do not sign Tyler Myers, please. It's the Panthers, so they probably will, but do not sign Tyler Myers.
Is he a lefty?
He is a righty.
At least. See? Yeah, that'd be even.
Yeah,
yeah
that would
I
be
mean,
bad. Don't do that.
I'd rather Trouba, obviously, because
yeah,
they're going
to
probably
well.
Get the same money. But
I mean, you look at other guys that are available. Like, the D, of just terms of, like, free agents, there's just not a lot. But, you know, trade, there will be D that get moved this year. I mean, it's guaranteed that there will be D that get moved in a pretty major way. So you have to find a way to exploit that market. And if you get one and you can develop somebody, you know, in the AHL and you can bring somebody up, you have an opportunity. This is not, you know, again, Josh Brown, not good. Not good. Ian McCaution, pretty safe
we,
to say, is kind of done.
Yeah, do we know if he exists anymore at this point?
He may not, but it's like, again, does somebody emerge out of, you know, out of the AHL? Who knows? We can't say at this point, but I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting Max Gilden to come and save the team, because
like,
if he does,
D.
he's going to be more Matheson style than.
Yeah, it's the only D that I can see in the system that's like steps above the fray of being a third pair guy other than Weegar. But
yeah,
should we go on to the draft now? Because I
well, the last thing is just about Matheson, and it's. The final thing is, you can't let your belief that Matheson is going to turn into a solid defenseman stop you from making a move on left-handed defense this summer, for the main reason that he's 26, he's not really put up that many points in the NHL. His years at BC were good, but not great by any standard. He wasn't a huge, crazy good prospect. He's got some good tools. Obviously, he's got one plus plus tool, and that's his skating. But his IQ's always kind of been, average or above average. His puck handling, it's Ken, everyone, I think, is still on the potential with Mike Matheson. And I think it's time to realize
If
that
someone's
he's
there
had
about
just as
my
many.
age, like,
Yeah.
I will say, I'm turning
It's
26 in August. We're at a point where potential's not really there anymore. It's about what you are at that age. And I think
And
Matheson
it's
is good. He's not as bad as he was last year, probably, Lord willing, but you have
And
to
if
give
you
him that chance. And if he is, then you have to find a way to move him, which
Right.
means
And if
maybe
you
expansion draft.
And you know, it's fine to give him another shot. I mean, obviously, give him another shot, see what he can do. And you're hoping and you want him to succeed and be a top four defenseman and allow you to have that spot transitioned after Yandle or whatever it becomes. But I think when you approach the situation from, okay, Matheson's turning 26, Matheson hasn't really had a long, consistent run in the NHL or in professional hockey where he was a top four defenseman. And frankly, if you're coming at that, you can't bet on him. If you want to actually win playoff series, you have to do more looking at this D on paper.
That's, as I said, it looks like they're planning on addressing it in some way, but we have to wait and see what they do. Now, I wanted to start the draft talk a little bit earlier, but here we are. We go on 40-minute tangents about the Panthers. It always happens. But let's go to the draft because this is Tommy's time. I love his draft stuff. Again, he has his quirks and unique things he looks for, mainly if you're playing in a European Pro League, but he's more often than not pretty good with this. So I defer to him in many ways. We'll quickly do 1-2, which is Kaapo Kakko and Jack Hughes. We both are on the Kakko train, and it's not just because we love Finland and everything about Finland. It's Jack Hughes was, if you looked at in the World Championships where Hughes plays and Kakko played, Kakko was dominant every time you saw him, right? He had that 3-minute shift, I think it was against the US, where he didn't give up the puck. Some of that's bigger ice, and some of that's he's used to playing on the bigger ice, and he's played against men his entire career. Jack Hughes was kind of stifled in this tournament. Now, he's a great player. I think he's going to be a really good NHLer, but I just don't know if I could say right now that Hughes is better than Kakko from all of the evidence. Like, I heard Kakko's name a couple years ago, like, he's really, really good, right? And now you watch him play and you go, the hype's real. Like, I want him on my team. And if he turns out to be, line A to Matthews or Barkov to MacKinnon, no one's going to complain. The only shame of it is he's going to go to the Rangers. And I have much less against the Devils. So I want the Devils to pick Kakko, but I don't think they're going to.
Yeah, I mean, it's really about whether you think Hughes is that has that much higher of a ceiling 5 years, 6, 7 years out over Kako, that the immediate benefit of Kako, who's going to be a top six forward next year, and possibly even a center, where I think Jack Hughes is a winger. I think if you think that Hughes just has the tools, whether you like his skating or is the way he reads the ice and the way he distributes the puck, which I think is his best, skill and habit. If you value that more in the long term, you're going to draft Hughes. But if you don't, it's really hard to not draft Kakko because of what he's done, not just this year, but over the last couple of years, moving through the Finnish ranks. He's outscored Barkov in the Finnish league. That's pretty impressive. He plays like Auston Matthews in that he's very unique with his body, using his body position and his back and turning his back,
There's
his
Semyon,
front away
there's
from the
Datsyuk
play.
in there.
Yeah, it's I don't, you know, he's not He's it's like Barkov when he was a draft prospect. A lot of people, ranked him a little further down because not one thing stood out. Like when you see Jack Hughes, two things stand out: his skating and the way he holds onto the puck and will find you know, a play at the last minute that you didn't think was going to happen because he looked off the last three plays. And if you're really into that, that's great. But the way Kako plays is much more direct, much more he gives the puck and get up faster. He moves the puck a little quicker. And it's more, let's get to the net. Let's get below the goal line. Let's use our body and let's be a little creative too with it. And he does a lot of the off the wall stuff that I would say Kuznetsov and Matthews are kind of known for. And like we said, he's ready next year, where Hughes would be the first player from the national development team to go straight to the NHL.
Can we talk about the national team development program for a second? It's something that you have gone on, and it's a lot right. with this group, and it goes down to where the Panthers are picking.
It's
USHL, which is a league that's improving, but is not major junior, is not certainly not playing with men. And the U.S. national team development program is always one of the best teams in the USHL. This year, like, right. almost all their players stuck around to play together, and they've just, you know, been the Harlem Globetrotters, and everybody else is the Washington Generals. Like,
yeah, and there's even more layers to the onion. Like, there's, okay, well, they play college teams, too. But when they play college teams, it's either around Christmas break or the beginning of the season, and they're exhibition games for the college teams. So you don't know, you know, what the roster really is, if it's a full roster, what goalies are starting, etc. Right? And how much effort and how much that team really is going to, you know, am I really going to skate out this icing, etc., etc. That kind of unfolds. But then you have the fact that the USHL team doesn't play in the playoffs or a full USHL schedule. So when they play other USHL teams and they're up 3-1, are these other USHL teams really putting in the effort to fight back or whatever? Or do they kind of just give up? Oh, it's the US team again. Here, they're on the fifth power play. Here they come again. You know, like, does that garbage time just exponentially increase the score? There's a lot of garbage time. And who are they playing? They're playing USHL, which is improving, like you said, but very recently, since the league's been improving, they underwent expansion. And you saw what happened in the NHL when expansion came around in the 90s a little bit, and especially in the 70s, that big era of expansion, the Bobby Orr era, the talent level decreases a bit. It's easier to score goals. It's easier to, you know, skate around guys and et cetera. And this is already a league that is akin to the BCHL. It's not the CHL. It's not the OHL. It's not that level. That's major junior. This is minor junior, and it's just not there yet. They're playing a lot of guys who are going to maybe play Division I, probably play Division III. That's kind of their competition level. And yes, some of these guys are 20, and I think there's – probably a few more guys who go on and play beyond junior, like play at the college level, that stick around and are playing in the USHL longer than the CHL. But it's not like you're playing a you know, the quality of strength and talent that you would in the NCAA
and it's not
or something.
That you can't emerge from that league. I mean, it.
Right. No, I mean, the league's good.
Just to finish that thought, is Cale Makar, who was drafted out of the BCHL, then won the Hobey Baker at UMass and looked
well,
great
in the
playoffs.
Alberta, yeah.
And, like, that's fine, but that's harder to do, and it's less of a sure thing.
And then you...
And I also, like, your line of thinking is, well, if he's proven that he could do it against men, professional athletes, who, whatever you want to talk about in terms of how good they are, they're not playing against their age group. They're dominating up. And that has always been, and that's why Barkov was so special. Like, he was so good against men. Now, the Panthers drafted him because they knew they didn't have any money to sign free agents to improve the team immediately, and Barkov was the way to do that, and it turned out to be one of the best decisions they've ever made in franchise history. Like, Kako's kind of like that. He's not a center, but he is that guy who feels like, I go in next year to the New York Rangers, who are going to be a better team than the Devils, which is probably what's going to happen, and you think, like, he could get 50, 60 points next year and be a top six, maybe even first line winger. Like, that's how good he is. And every time you right. watch him, it's not just stats. It's like sometimes it boils down to, like, does he look the part in many ways? And Jack Hughes does, but he looks the part against kids. Kapokako looks the part against men.
how many first round draft picks have the luxury of playing minor junior hockey, and they're a center, and arguably the two of the other best centers in the draft are on the same team. So that's the first three centers on that team. Or Alex Turcotte, Jack Hughes, and Zegras. And then so you start going in, and that USHL team or U Dev team is one of the only Dev teams to stay together all through, you know, all the way up. Most kids are going, filtering off to juniors, filtering off to college, you know, whether they're trying to graduate high school early or whatever. There's some loss there. There's, you know, the best players take that next step. They didn't, because of some of them were born a little later in the draft year. Some of them just liked hanging out, et cetera. That's fine. But when your top six is all first round eligible, is all first round projected, and you have a goalie who's one of the best goalies in the draft and possibly in the last couple drafts, and then you have a couple defensemen who are also considered first round draft eligible, all on the same team, all playing this minor junior hockey, it's really hard to judge that for somebody who's putting up
versus the Washington Generals.
Yeah, and so you have historic U.S. development team and one person on a historic team putting up historic numbers versus Kaapo Kakko, who's doing historic things on pro teams or junior teams without much. His world championship team that he helped lead to a gold medal at the world championships was professional. That was a men's league championship.
They had like two NHLers and one of them
12
was
NHL
Lamico.
Points. 12 NHL points in the lineup, and they won gold. He won the world junior gold medal. He won the U18.
Year before. I think this is much of a Euro bias here. I think this is like, holy crap, he's this good.
And I think the biggest reason it is a lot of people don't like making that last minute switch, or they don't like, you know, once Hughes kind of gets the momentum going, it's hard to go back. And this is somebody who has a brother that's pretty well known, that's doing really well.
Wasn't his father a scout for a certain team that plays in Toronto?
Yes, and I think a certain team that plays in Florida as well, a little bit. So, you know, there's a lot there, and his mom's involved in the sport as well, and that's just really hard to beat. I mean, it's somewhat a popularity contest.
The Panthers once drafted Zach Hyman because they wanted his dad to invest in the team. The thing that happened, that's how this sport works. And as much as I hate it, sometimes you have to put that in with your draft analysis sometimes. And listen, I think that the Devils are going to draft Hughes because they need everything. As much as
I think it's at that point, they don't want to have a lot of teams just don't want to have the look of not taking the consensus number one who's labeled a center and blah, 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 even though he might not be a center, even though he might not be consensus one, even though he won't be the best, he won't be the rookie of the year next year.
As I said, for the Rangers, you probably just had Kaapo Kakko fall into your laps, and congratulations. You know, it's like, as I said, it reminds me of Matthews and Laine, and it reminds me a little of MacKinnon and Barkov, even though, you know, MacKinnon and Barkov's different, because Barkov was not projected to go where he did, and he turned out like that was, again, one of the best decisions the Panthers ever made. But I can't.
Yeah, I mean,
listen, we are for Kakko. I think the Devils are going to take Hughes. I think you think the Devils are going to take Hughes as well.
I think this is overall an average draft. I know there's a lot of people who really like a lot of the USHL guys and like the USHL dev team and believe they're all centers. And because they believe that there's better centers in the draft than I do, and because they believe more in the USHL and the minor junior guys than I do, like Alex Newhook from the BCHL, et cetera, they have this as an above average draft. Prahman, some guys on TSN, Mike Morale, they have it as, you know, a tick above average class. I don't, but what I do think is above average is a goaltending defenseman. So I kind of come in at a different way. I think it's average, but I think more highly of the defenseman and the goalies, I think, than they do.
To the Panthers now, who are picking 13th, And I'm looking at the recent NHL.com mock draft. And do you know who they have the Panthers taking?
Tell me a left defenseman.
No.
A unanimous decision,
I will say.
Alex Newhook.
No, that was the TSN mock draft that I showed you.
I was going to say. Show, oh,
which was also not good. No. Yeah. Spencer Knight, and I know that's going to make you ecstatic.
Why?
Let me read you. For one of the, I'll read you all the explanations. I don't know the names of the NHL guys. I think Mike Morreale is one of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who, by the way, his daughter went to Marist. So congratulations, Marist alumni connection. There's some
Seawolves.
Seawolves.
The Marist Seawolves. That's what they're called.
No, Marist. We're the Red Foxes.
Oh man. Right. No, I'm thinking of another team. Ah, whatever. I keep thinking, who are the Seawolves? Oh, Stony Brook.
Know.
Stony Brook Seawolves. I apologize. I'm getting Marist and Stony Brook mixed up because of women's lacrosse things that were in my head. Anyway, the best
happens to me all the time, man.
Yeah, the best goalie in the draft matches well with the team in desperate need of adding a young goalie. Knight is solid fundamentally and a tremendous athlete, which he displayed by finishing the top 15 in 8 categories during the fitness testing at the NHL Scouting Combine. That wouldn't be a reason to draft a goalie 13th overall, as far as I'm concerned. More reality, the Panthers need solid goalie prospects in their system, as Knight is considered one of the best at the position in years. A BC recruit, Knight is rarely out of position, has great instincts, is efficient in his movements, and consistently square to the shooter. No. Now, you made the point on the podcast no one's going to hear that if the Panthers want to draft Knight, you trade down, which I'm okay if you want to do that.
Yeah.
But you also believe that there's a lot of goalie depth and you could take one with your 3 fourth-round picks. And I agree with you. Taking a first-round goalie is hard because goalies are voodoo and they develop in weird ways. And who was the last first-round like goalie that's turned out to be like, holy crap?
Vasilevsky.
And that's a rare unicorn. Like when the,
but
when
I mean, and that wasn't 13th overall. That was 19th overall.
Yeah, like the Capitals took Samsonov a couple of years ago, right? And one day he might be the backup or the heir apparent to Braden Holtby. But that's taking years. Have an immediate
to miss the playoffs decision. And then draft a goalie is something.
No, you don't do that. You won't be happy if the Panthers draft a goalie there.
Right.
I don't think they're going to. I legit
because
don't
you have
that.
You have a lot of 18 like draft first year draft eligible goalies like Mads Søndergaard who plays in Medicine Hat and WHL. So that's a good development place for a goalie. And you that's kind of a consistent, you know, what's going to expect, but he's 6'7". He's showed well. I mean, he had a rough, World Junior, but he showed well in the WHL and he's got enough gifts and that's somebody you could probably get in the third round. And then they have goalies who are 20-21. So they're more of a sure thing. They're more of a finished product. You kind of know what you're going to get who have played, pretty well and have put up, you know, either close to records or record kind of numbers and categories in the KHL or the second league in Russia. And that would be worth – that would be a better value add than Spencer Knight at 13. Spencer Knight, I think that there's still 20-some forwards that are first-round quality in my mind, forwards like 22 maybe. There's 9D – 8 D I draft in the first round that I would draft before Spencer Knight. So that gets me to like 30. But I'd be okay with the team taking him 20 on back if you really want to do it. But I'd want to know what the plan is. If you're taking that much, if you're wasting an asset like that they could have traded, that they could have drafted a center with, that they could have drafted a defenseman with, and it's spending on Spencer Knight, you then can't lock yourself into Bobrovsky. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's like it just thing. Like if you're drafting Spencer Knight, then why the heck are you?
You're basically signaling. You're basically signaling that you don't think you're going to get Bobrovsky is basically what you're signaling, and that would be pretty deflating. That'd be a pretty stupid thing to do. So I wouldn't like that. I think there's definitely some wingers like Podolskin and Kaliev, the two Russians, one who plays in Russia, Podolskin, one who plays in the OHL.
And do you know where one of them was born?
Well, he says he's from Russia or Long Island or Staten Island. He does not say anything about Delray. So
he's from Delray Beach, and you know what the Panthers are going to do with that.
Yeah, but you know,
well quickly, Kaliev, would you draft him if he was available at 13?
Yeah, I mean, but if I would draft him, it'd because I would just be flipping Owen Tippett like the day, the next day.
Yeah. you've drafted your last two first round picks are, you know, scoring wingers.
Wingers, yeah. How many? Yeah. So you definitely want to move one out, and it wouldn't be Denisenko because he's too goddamn good and too versatile compared to Tippett, who's less versatile.
And he like almost directly replaces Evgeny Dadonov if you don't re-sign him. Like he right. fits perfectly into that role. Now, right. you know who the Litterbox, our friends at Litterbox, you know who they had the Panthers drafting in their mock draft?
My hopeful pick, yeah. Phil Broberg.
Yeah, do you know how funny that is? What the like the professionals are having this, and the Panthers blogs, the few of them that there are, have them drafting the guy you want.
Right. Well, I don't think Broberg's going to get to 13. I think that's my issue. There's a lot of people who think of him as the second best defenseman in the draft. I have him as the best defenseman in the draft. I'll tell you, it's because of one big thing. As much as good as Bo and Byram has been, as many goals and points he's put up, that's akin to, you know, Ty Smith did it more with assists, but Ty Smith put up roughly the same amount of even strength points, etc. Didn't have the playoffs that Bo Byram had, so that's one thing to consider.
Ty
but
Smith went like, what you know, was it? He went to the Devils at like 17, 18.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah. But in a very good defensive draft, with you know a draft that had more defensemen in the first round and first round quality than I think this one does. But you know, they're both pretty solid defensive classes. But you know, you can get a Byram in the first round, especially if you're picking in the first 15 most years. I mean, yeah. I don't want to put him down too much, but Broberg is his skating is Jack Hughes level. And he's 6'4", 200 pounds right now, played a pretty decent year in the second Swedish league, probably is playing in the SHL next year and could be NHL ready the following year. That's
huge.
And the
other thing that the Panthers have the ability to do with their first round pick is they can do anything they want because the player does not need to be there right away.
Yeah, and the thing with Broberg is he's just so unique. I mean, the way he skates, the way he pushes plays, the way he can strip a puck and transition up the ice with that much power, speed, and still, I mean, his hands aren't great, but he makes the headsy plays. He makes the plays that guys with good hands make. He makes them, and he has good enough hands at his size to pull them off enough. So if you really like Brent Burns, this is, I mean, he might not be as nasty as Brent Burns. But he still throws his body around. He's got that. He plays that offensive style, and he can turn wide. He can get around defenders. Forwards can't really turn and get around him because he skates so well, pivoting. He skates so well transitioning forward to backward skating, and with his size and reach, there's just nowhere to go. And Corey Prom and others who maybe knock him because they don't know if he has the first power play potential. The one thing they don't knock him in is defense, is preventing entries, is getting the puck back, is, you know, they say obviously he probably needs to make a little better decision in front of his net sometimes and he loses coverage, but he's a first year eligible defenseman. That's expected. But everything else, it's just so unique. You're not going to find it anywhere else. If he's on the board and you're the Panthers where you need D, you need everything pretty much except wingers, how do you not draft him? I don't know how teams don't draft him in the top 10. I'd probably be drafting him as soon as 3 or 4 because that's where people want Byram taken, and to me, he's a better defenseman.
So what about the other D behind them? The
good news is my Kimmo Tiimonen type defenseman, Who's also getting Miro Heiskanen in a smaller package type comparison.
Can we start first talk about Heiskanen, who could end up also being the best player from that draft? I mean, it could be him or Makar at this point. But now I know you like one of the teams that had a top two pick in that draft, and I understood why Nolan Patrick went when he did, but isn't it kind of funny now that we're looking at that draft 2 years on and the two best players are going to be Makar and Heiskanen probably? Like, both were just insanely good this year.
I think with Heiskanen, it's more guaranteed that this is who he is. I think with Makar, I think there's going to be more variance up and down. I think he came in hot. I think, you know, it helps that he didn't have as many games played that some of the other guys did. He was coming off of Hobie Baker. Like, you know, when you're feeling it, he's insane. Feeling it. He had some BDE. I think that helps. I think with, I know, not to discount them or anything, but Yeah, it'd be nice to get a defenseman like that, and maybe Ville Heinola is like that, the guy I was talking about. He's a super headsy. He always makes the right play. He's always thinking of how he can get the puck up to his forwards quicker. He's not going to be holding on to it too much. He's not going to be pushing the play up the ice. He's not going to be like Matheson, just kind of doing circles in his own zone. And him and Victor Soderstrom, I think, are the two D with the best IQs, smartest. You know, they kind of think the game as well as, you know, Victor Hedman and Drew Doughty and some of these guys who have that Norris type intelligence. Vinola, Soderstrom, I don't think have, you know, Norris type natural tools, but they have good enough natural tools that I could see them on first pairing defensemen. So Broberg, Byram, Soderstrom, Heinola, are really the guys I could see as first pair guys. Two other Swedes I could see as first pair guys, Tobias Bjornfurt and Albert Johansson. And those are defensemen that kind of just solidify the fact that if Florida walks away with a Swedish defenseman at 13, they probably made the right
If
choice. If they walk
you look
away
at
with a
the SB
Finnish
Nation,
defenseman,
if
you're
you look at
feeling
the SB,
okay.
yeah, if you look at the SB Nation draft, like all the blogs did, like if the draft went this way, you'd go like, wow, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're Florida, picks 1 through 10, you're hoping for you just hope for all the USHL guys to go, all the centers to go. You know, you're hoping every team wants a winger or a center, just so there's more D for Florida to pick, and
In
then,
this
you know.
draft, the only D that goes before the Panthers is Bowen Byram.
Possibly, yeah. I
Well,
mean,
I'm just looking at the SB Nation mock draft. That's all that I'm
okay.
looking at. So that doesn't
Yeah.
mean that necessarily it'll turn out like that, but as I said, like I'm all on team you need to draft day. I'm on team you need to draft day 100%.
Well,
Like
I think the first three spots aren't D. I think it's Kako. I think it's Hughes, Kako, Turcotte.
I think that's pretty obvious. I think that's where most people are settling in. But, like,
And you
all the
know,
teams above them.
Turcotte, you know, I haven't met made too much about him, but you know, on a positive, when he played, you know, at the USHL level, he was, you know, point per 60 or points per game or whatever, was outproducing Jack Hughes this year. So, you know, at three, it's not crazy, especially since he's a natural center and I could see him being a center.
In this SB Nation mock draft, Kaliev was also still on the board, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind taking Kaliev, Podolskin if they're there. I wouldn't take Boldy if he was there, and he might be there.
We talked about Podkolzin
If
on the other
Doc,
on we
if
talked
Kirby
about
Doc is there, I'd maybe take him too. But other than that, I'd probably just lean D because that's what they need, and I like this D class. I mean, they need Swedes. We talk about how they need a goddamn Swede and they need a goddamn D, and there's so many left-handed D who are Swedes here. It makes too much sense. Even if it's a reach like Albert Johansson, maybe you drop back a few picks and you take them, or you just step up and take them at
There are a couple of
13
other
or
things
something.
I wanted to mention about this draft. The first thing is, Podkolzin is falling a lot. He was like third in mock drafts until recently. Now he's not. The Panthers can
Yeah.
afford to take him because obviously they don't care if they take Russians, and they could afford to let him develop and marinate even in the KHL for a couple years. They just don't need it. But they've already taken players like that, so I'm not sure they need to take another one. And the other thing that I think we need to mention is are you in favor of trading 13 overall to get, I mean, probably a D that would help you immediately? And I think you said yes. Depends on the day, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, and I would. I mean, I think you can still, like, you know, I'm talking about Albert Johansson. I wouldn't mind him at 13 or trading back to like the early 20s to get him. There's a good chance he's available at 52. So you could, you know, trade it, get a D now, and still pick a guy who'd I feel comfortable enough in the farm system that it'd be okay. It'd be, you know, I think there's some forwards that could get at 52. You know, or 69 or wherever the hell they draft
Oh, they have the
with
69th
52.
pick, the best pick in the draft.
Yeah, I know they do have that. I just don't know if it's their second or third one.
So, by the way, the lat I mean, the Panthers have taken, in terms of Swedes, in this decade, they have
None.
taken four Swedes in the draft. 2011, they took Rasmus Bengtsson, who you've never heard of. They took
who Pittsburgh signed a few years ago and hasn't really done anything with him.
Jonathan Nielsen in the seventh round. You've never heard of him either. They took, of course, Hugo Fagerblom, a goalie in 2014, who you've never heard of, and Linus Nassen, who you've also never heard of because...
who's going to the Liga. He just graduated from Medicine Hat. I think him and Ludwig Byström, who's the Swede they have in the AHL, are both going back to Europe next year.
Well, they haven't signed Nassen yet, the Panthers, so...
Well, yeah, and Borgstrom's... up is an RFA, so we'll see how that, or not Borgstrom, Bystrom.
Bystrom's an RFA, but you could always say that to retain.
And the, so the closest thing they have to a Swede is Henrik Borgstrom, who's just, you know, has Swedish ancestry. Yeah.
Well, the other D that they took last year, and I do want to mention this before we move on from the draft a little bit to other NHL things, was you posted the profile of Santtu Kettunen, who they took in the seventh round, and could actually end up being the best D the Panthers have in their prospect pool. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, unfortunately, he's right-handed.
Unfortunately, he's right-handed, but, you know, you read that profile and you were going like, oh, wow, isn't he good?
Yeah, I think what I like about him is he's the type of defenseman we were talking about. He's a facilitator. His job is to handle the D so his partner can get up the ice. His job is to get the puck back so the forwards can have the puck on their stick. And he's a good skater. He's a very good skater. He was a second-year draft eligible who really was in a junior league and didn't get much scouting. But, you know, like Kekalainen's known for, he saw something in him. And when it came to Kekalainen draft time, he got his say in. They used a seventh-round pick.
Not Jarmo. He's done all right, too. But Jari Kekalainen has done Barkov. He's responsible in large regard for Borgstrom. He's responsible for Heppo Niemi, who, I mean, I can't ask for.
I'll give a stick tap and an assist to the PCS guys because I feel like with those numbers in the WHL, Heppo Niemi was kind of high on that system as well.
Yeah, it probably was too. And I mean, I think that he had a large role to play in Denisenko last year too. Seems like as we talked about with the Panthers in the draft. The last 2 years, it's been really easy to figure out what they want to do, what they've identified, and you might laugh about what Chris Pronger said when they had six of their top 40 players last year, they took them. But they have a process in the draft that they've identified and has worked the last 2 years, and even if they haven't had an A-plus draft, they've had two B-plus really solid drafts, and if you can produce a couple of good players from those drafts, no one's going to complain. And you might, you know, gripe on Tippett, but listen, they also took Aleksei Hemponiemi, who's freaking amazing. And who has signed and is going to be in the A this year. I mentioned it to you before that it's a possibility, maybe, that he has, like, if he really balls out during training camp, there's a potential he has, like, a Teuvo Teravainen in 2015 kind of impact. Because we know that we can see that with Joel Quenneville, right? And, like, that's the closest example I can think of to maybe what Heppo Niemi could be, and I'm not sure he's going to make it to the big team this year, but he could.
Yeah.
So I want to go now, because we focused on the draft, a bunch of other NHL things.
Let me just wrap up the draft.
Okay.
Two other defensemen who get talked a lot about, and, you know, a lot of people, Thomas Harley, Mississauga, really young defender for the draft.
Mississauga. I think he's like 6'2". I can't believe you still say that, but okay.
What am I supposed to say?
Mississauga. But what?
Mississauga.
I know.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to mention this because I'm gonna plug something here. More junior hockey related things, but very junior hockey. All
right, good, because then I can start off and say Mississauga.
Yeah.
Mississauga?
Yeah, I know. But I want to plug this. We are all now huge fans of the Milton Menace, OJHL. You know why we're a fan? Paige. And also, their uniforms are sick. They're just beautiful. Paige, I don't know if you're listening, but we love Paige. She's the best. You need to send us both Milton Menace jerseys immediately. I will wear that out in the street and go, I don't care. You will never have heard of this team. It's a tiny junior hockey team outside of Toronto, but my friend works for that team, and they're great. I want a Milton Menace jersey immediately. As I said, is that our new favorite junior team on this show? It probably is our favorite junior team on this show.
I'll still always like Sault Ste. Marie as my favorite. I don't know if that'll change, but yeah.
Well, I mean,
pretty
that's
close.
pretty
I mean,
high,
definitely minor junior. I
oh,
definitely,
like in terms of that,
especially with the
yes.
way I've been talking about them this podcast,
Yeah,
but
well, it's different. The OJ's different. The OJ's different, but you know, I mean, as I said,
yeah.
Paige is the best, and I want
But
those uniforms are absolutely spectacular. Those are
yeah,
some of the most
but
beautiful hockey uniforms that I've seen just out right now. This is great. Anyway, so let's move on to other things in terms
can
of
I,
hockey.
well, you didn't let me finish.
I
You
didn't
didn't
let
let
you finish
me
because I was too focused on Paige. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So Cam York, defenseman, talked about it.
I've seen him
he's,
in mock drafts to the Panthers.
Too. He wouldn't be terrible at 13, but you know he's got to go to. We don't know how much was just propped up by. I don't think he's that offensive. I think anybody who thinks he's going to be running a first power play, or anybody who think at the NHL level, or anybody thinks he's going to be a 40-point guy, 35-point guy at the NHL level. I mean, maybe he will be. I hope he proves me wrong for his sake. That'd be a lot of money for him. But I think his offensive tools really were just shown up a lot by the team he was on. I think he's going to be more like a Slavin. You know, or Pesci, or you know, like those Carolina transitional D. I think he's really good at retrieving pucks and breaking them out and causing disruptions in the neutral zone. But I don't know if he has that top end skill. I see him more of as kind of tapping out the second pair than the first pair. Where there's some guys up there at 13. If you're drafting a D in 13, I hope you think he's a first pair defenseman in your heads. Harley. I think he's good enough and everything, but he's just that same Yandel Matheson style in my head, kind of like a Chabot-ish.
I mean, Thomas Chabot's a good defenseman, but you know,
right?
Like,
and
if we're talking about the Panthers, they need D that are different than that.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be terrible to draft him, but I think that. You know, if Broberg's on the board, it would be a mistake. Even if a guy like Soderstrom or Hanola is on the board, I think it might even still be a mistake there because they play the game. They have that style that they need that would fit next to an Ekblad, that would fit next to a Yandel, that would fit next to a Matheson, a Gildan, who are kind of the D, the other D in the system. And, or, you know, whichever D you'd get, they kind of fit well in there. And they play like Barkov. And, people didn't see it in Barkov's draft year, but when you have that type of intelligence that Heiskanen and Makar have and stuff, and you process the game that quickly and you move the puck that quickly, you don't have to be flashy to be effective as a defenseman.
If you
and Barkov
play 2 seconds ahead of what else is going on as a D, especially in this era in the NHL where D have to move the puck quickly and are charged with doing all of those things that, you know, D used to never really have to do in full force, but you have to do in the league now. That's exactly what you want.
Right.
So,
and then finally, I would go Russians.
Okay.
Definitely go Russians when in doubt.
Don't draft Russians. The Panthers always, they don't
the,
care.
The final thing is definitely that this is a Russian year. There's a lot of really good Russians and a lot of really good leagues, and the way the Russians have been developing the last couple of years, they're definitely the hot commodity at this draft. And whether it's in the seventh round, first round, they'll be a good Russian.
So you think the Panthers are taking a Russian in this draft?
Yeah, and I hope it's Arseny Gritsyuk because that's like Datsyuk and Gritty combined, and so we're one last name. But he looks pretty good at the U18 championships, and you know he plays kind of like that. I don't know if it's as skilled as. Some of these like Rantanen type players, but I think he has that type of high flying puck, like kind of puck possession, keep the puck out, Rupe Hintz type.
Another player that just emerged this year, now everyone loves Rupe Hintz. Can I say one thing? Because you,
why one hot? Why hockey?
Yeah, can you remind me of something? Because you know where we've always bemoaned the fact that the Panthers would have taken Mikko Rantanen if he was available in 2015 and they instead took Lawson Krause, who was bad. You know what? We saw in 31 Thoughts, and I know this didn't kill you that much, but it made me laugh. In 2007, the Panthers were going to take Logan Couture if he fell to them. And, it didn't happen.
I mean, who did they end up taking that draft?
I don't even remember, but it was bad.
Well,
You know who it,
I
you know who it was?
Logan
You know who
Couture's
it was?
good and everything, but I find his face very punchable,
You
so
know
I'm not too
who they
upset.
took? Keaton Ellerbe.
I would, yeah. I mean, I'm okay with repeating that era, that error, because, you know, it got us Barkov, it got us some good players just by being perpetually bad for
Yeah,
a
just by
while.
being perpetually bad, but I mean, like,
And
Logan
Logan
Couture, even
Couture,
for
like I
landing on the
said,
Panthers, would
his
have been
face is
something.
so.
I like
Yeah,
Logan
I mean,
Couture.
I'm more upset about Timo Meier,
Yeah,
for
Timo
sure,
Meier and the big ones.
Brandon and
As I said, the
all that.
Panthers are
Yeah.
not in the position they're in right now if they had Timo Meier or Mika Rantanen. It's just guaranteed. But as I said, we have that on good authority that that's who they were going to take if they weren't picked ahead of them. I remember you and I were at that draft. We weren't together, but I know that happened. And the same thing, we were at the 2014 draft, but we weren't together then. So I think that's good enough for draft, but obviously there's a lot of things that still has to happen here that we'll get to when we get to the draft. Of course, we're going to have a lot of Why Hockey podcasts in the coming weeks because this is one of the great times of the year in hockey fandom. But let's move on to other NHL things. Last night during the Stanley Cup Final, the Flyers decided to trade for the rights of Kevin Hayes, which made me laugh because... Well, while the Flyers
Speaking
have...
of punchable.
Yeah, I know. So now he goes from the Rangers to the Flyers. Isn't that great? Well, technically the Jets, but... You know,
Yeah, and it's not like his brother Jimmy was doing any favors for him.
No, not quite. Let's focus on, though... You told me before we started recording that there was a reason why the Flyers did this, and I think they're going to pay him like $5 to $6 million to be their third-line center, you know, behind Giroux and Couturier, but...
I think that they're paying him $6 million to be their second-line center. I think that they're going to keep Couturier and Giroux on the first line. They're
Oh,
going to,
they're gonna put Giroux on wing. Ooh.
yeah, I think, and you know, it's worked there before. That's kind of how he had his resurgence, was playing a lot on the wing and not having to overuse his hip and groin, skating all up and down the ice as a center. I think some of his development has been because he's never really been allowed to be a third liner. He's either been forced into a second line position or kind of dropped to the fourth line because of, you know, perceptions of not producing or being off or whatever. And I think slotting him in his regular position center at the third line, if they're able to get Kevin Hayes, his 5-on-5 production is pretty good, as much as I hate to admit it. And that might allow Patrick to really kind of be what Borgstrom kind of needs in Florida, which is just good line mates, easy minutes, and the ability to just kind of get that offensive goal scoring creation and confidence. Something that Couturier finally got, probably a little too late in his career. And if they can keep Patrick from waiting that long, maybe Patrick will still live up to that second overall hype. I'm not too disappointed with the way Patrick has played too much based on what I was expecting, but you know, there's a reason they're spending $6 million on the 2C, before the season is even over technically. And one of the reasons is there's not many center free agents. And after Brock Nelson just got what I think
six
close to
six.
Six over six, it was kind of like, all right, let's not turn this into a bidding war. Let's see if we can get this done like tomorrow.
Like, I don't think it's a bad thing, but it just
no,
it just like.
But it's Fletcher, man.
I mean, it is Fletcher,
right?
And after you hire Alain Vigneault as your coach and your assistants are Yo and Terry and who are not good, it just feels like the Flyers are wasting something.
It seems like Fletcher has 2 years to really do something, or they're probably going to have to move Giroux, and he probably has a bullet in his chamber before moving Giroux, and that's moving Voracek because he has no trade protection and same cap
because they need to move a D,
right? But I think that would be in conjunction with Voracek and that kind of stuff, because that would be it. Voracek would be a lot of cap space to open up.
They already have a ton of it.
Yeah.
So
but,
they can
I mean,
afford
I think,
to pay Kevin Hayes six over six if they wanted
yeah.
to. It's not like it
but
didn't make
you
sense
look,
for them.
You look at Hextall was the model of patience, and they gave the patience a bit. Even when Schneider tried patience, Schneider passed away. Comcast tried patience, and I think, they're just out of patience. Giroux's out of patience. He doesn't want to. He just spent
The Flyers last won a
how
playoff
many
series in
seasons?
2012. That's 7
Yeah, how
years without
many
a playoff
seasons
series.
did Giroux on? Giroux took a little discount at the time to stay in Philadelphia, sign a contract, and help him out. And most of those years, they wasted with a coach he did not like, with the team he wasn't, super competitive with. And I think this is their last hurrah for Giroux. And I think
He's
the
got
way they
3 more
hired their
years at
coaches,
8.275. Yeah.
yeah, they hired the coaches that speak to that. This trade speaks to that because this is, hey, we don't want to have to start you at center at the beginning of the year. We don't want to have to quit. If Hayes goes down or Couturier goes down, then you can pull Patrick up, or then, you can have, they have some centers
Scott
like Morgan
Lawton.
Frost, Scott Law, and Vorborev, who maybe halfway through the season would be ready to step up, where Giroux wouldn't even have to be a backup center. And I think that they're really just trying to make the best of Giroux while they have him. And I don't blame them for that. I just hope
I
that they're
listen,
making the
I
right
actually
decisions.
agree with you. I think that that's a very reasonable explanation, and I don't think it means that they're
From
bad.
me? Hold on, can you say that again?
I do agree with you. I think you're right.
It's a reasonable explanation.
I think it completely is reasonable. When you pointed it out, I 100% see where you're coming from. I still don't think it makes the Flyers any better, but listen, it makes sense. They gave up a fifth round pick for his
I
rights.
think it
That's not
makes
good.
them a little better 5-on-5.
I have no idea what this team's going to look like in many ways because who the hell knows what a team
I think
coached
they're.
by Alain Vigneault and that group is going to look like. But
I mean, I
I know
think
what they're
they will
trying to do.
look
I see it. I
like
don't think it
the
helps, but
Rangers.
that's me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps a bit. I think it's more important
They
what they
still need more
do
offense.
with. Well, what do they do with D? I think, the goalie is just gonna take care of itself. They
It's
either
going to be
pick
Martin
Brian
Talbot.
Elliott or Cam
It's going to
Talbot.
be Martin Talbot next year.
Yeah, probably. And that's fine. That would be good enough. Their forwards are pretty much taking shape now. The one thing they really needed was that center. And if they sign Hayes, they have him
You're
because
not
it's
trading
just.
a fifth round pick to not sign Kevin Hayes. They're going to sign him.
Yeah, I think that they had a pretty good intention. It's just, can they maybe save some dollars by making that deal before he talks to other teams and hears other numbers from
He's
other
got
teams?
two plus weeks to do that, and I think the answer is yes. As I said, I mentioned Philippe Myers. I think that they're going to end up putting him into the top six next year. It's pretty obvious. But then you've got other D you got to move. Like, somebody's
Yeah,
got to
I
go
mean,
out of there. They've
you
got too
have to
many.
sign Provorov and Sanheim, and
You could
that's going to be
afford to give
tricky.
up one of them.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, who do you give up? Because Sanheim looks like the way they're trending, Sanheim's trending up, Provorov's stagnating or trending down. Provorov's the older one. And when you
Actually,
go back to the
Sanheim's
fact,
older by a year.
well, not if you go by the fact that Provorov's birth certificate's
Oh,
dead.
yeah.
It's
More service
100%
time.
fake. Well, no, he's just not the age that he has on his birth certificate. It's just not his actual age. I still feel very confident saying that on record.
Oh my God. I'm not going off on that, all right?
But I think that's going to be a pressure point. And can Fletcher avoid the pressure point? Is I don't see anything. I think Hextall could have. I think he's shown time and again that he could avoid pressure points. Maybe it was not in the way that led to wins fast enough, but he kind of moved around this stuff pretty easily. It'll be interesting to see what Fletcher can do. But
He's got
yeah, I mean,
$33 million in cap
he's,
space.
yeah, and that's the scary part to me because I don't know where that's going to go. It'd be nice if they made a run at Carlson. I think they're a team that can. They need right-handed defensemen. He's a right-handed defenseman. They have cap
I
space. They
saw a
need.
rumor today that he's hoping for offers from Montreal and Ottawa, Erik Karlsson.
Why is he hoping from offers from Ottawa?
I have no idea because he likes it there, and hockey players like it where they are comfortable. I have no idea. This is just a story that I saw. I still think, you know what? for team number one's probably Tampa and team two's the Rangers. That's I'm gonna go on record and saying that.
I don't yeah. I mean, I think Philadelphia obviously has a shot.
Oh, the Flyers should, but I don't know whether the
Sharks obviously have a shot at getting him. But yeah, I think that's probably it on teams.
Yeah, and now we move to
what does Philadelphia really need to do though? I think it's they need to go through their left-hand side on the defense, and they need to figure out which right-hand defenseman they're adding into their system, and can they get rid of McDonald? Can they get rid of Gudas?
See, the Flyers need right D.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame we don't have any right D good enough to trade them.
Yeah,
because the right D we have that are good enough, we need to keep. Yeah.
Let's focus now on the other coaches that were hired. We'll do a quick thing on all of them. The Sabres hired Ralph Kruger, which, I mean, I would have been entirely for if the Panthers didn't get Quenneville. I think Kruger's going to be all right for the Sabres. He's a different kind of voice. He has all different kinds of perspectives, which is obviously something I think that you need. He is a bit of an out-of-the-box hire. That's what I like. The problem is the Sabres are such a cluster F that I have no idea whether that's salvageable. He's going to have to do a lot of what we call in soccer man management to, like, get players on side. Like, can he make Jack Eichel happy with life? You know what I mean? Like, what is that going to look like is a huge question, because they just cycle through coaches, and there's a rot in that place that needs to be fixed. I don't know what it's going to be. It looks like they're going to re-sign Jeff Skinner, which they kind of have to do. They have no choice. But, you know, I think Kruger's a good coach. He's better than most of the other coaches that were hired, but I don't legitimately know how much he's going to be able to do to fix that team.
I think they need to improve their center ice position. I mean, it's obvious they need to improve their D.
Oh, you know, they did trade Ryan corner, O'Reilly, who might win the Conn Smythe trophy, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, I mean, they really just need to – they never undid their building after Murray. And I think it's because they wanted to keep some pieces around Jack Eichel, but I mean, Sam Bennett kind of turned around, which is nice, but
I mean, they still got
they don't have centers, they don't have D. I mean, I don't know if, but they don't have any centers, they don't have any D, and how I'm still very much the proponent of you build out to the center of the ice, crease to centers D increase, and I don't think they have the goalie. I don't think they have a D outside Dahlin, and I don't think they have a center outside Eichel. So yeah, they have the big pieces, but they don't have the complementary pieces around their big pieces, and they don't have a goalie. And you can probably draft your way to D with how young Rasmus is, and you want to put that core in like a similar age group to him around them. But I'd be looking at getting NHL ready centers. I mean, Kevin Hayes would have been, Kevin Hayes at $6 million probably would be a more bigger ad for Buffalo than Philadelphia. But obviously Kevin Hayes is pretty choosy about what teams he plays on. Yeah, I mean, Duchesne would be huge for Buffalo. I think Duchesne's somebody that would sign in Buffalo. He's big into like fan bases
he certainly got that. But I mean, he's done so much losing in his life. Does he want to go to the Sabres? I mean, he was already
winning. Well, he keeps saying he wants to win, and then goes to team.
Crappy teams. I mean, it always happens that way. But I mean, he would be like there's that. But I mean, I don't know. The Sabres are a mess, and I don't know whether they're going to get out of it. But that was a good signing, and of course, you know, the Red Wings hired Steve Yzerman, so you know at some point they're going to turn it around because Steve Yzerman.
I think that's more reason to believe that the Sabres might not turn it around, is that the competition got a little harder, and like, it's harder to turn it around when you're going to push down the division.
The Senators are just going to be garbage for a couple of years, like completely rotten.
But there's no reason to think that Buffalo is not that next team.
I mean, they haven't proven
for the next 5 years.
Look at this division. Because you still have the Lightning, who are going to be great. The Leafs are going to go for it. I fully believe that they're going to do some big things. The Bruins could win the Stanley Cup. The Panthers, I'm getting my signals crossed on this podcast.
You're like
me. It must be the pool at Bobby Clark's old house, which is 5 minutes away from where I live, oddly enough. that is getting me thinking about that. But the Panthers hire Joel Quenneville. They might spend, you know, $20 million a year on Panarin and Bobrovsky. The Canadiens aren't exactly bad. It is conceivable next year that the top four teams in the East are all Atlantic Division teams.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing Buffalo's hoping for is Carey Price, like, blowing out his knee or something. I mean, that's or that's the that's how they're
the Panthers, basically.
Yeah, that's how they're leapfrogging teams in the standings. It's not looking good, but like you said, Ralph Kruger was, I mean, for my money, the guy if it wasn't going to be Quenneville. So that's a good – I can't knock that decision at all. But how much can he change? Can he change the culture from where he's sitting? Can he change the roster from where he's sitting?
When we say that's culture, something we'll have to say. It's a buzzword in hockey, and it can mean a lot of things. But you know what? Like with the Sabres, it's legit a problem. Like, they are a team that loses and loses, and it's a rut in there.
And it's the same type of problem that Philadelphia had with Ed Schneider. And, you know, I think Pegula's kind of doing his best Schneider impression, where he'll sign the biggest checks you can think of. He'll do this, he'll do that. Everything will be state of the art. And he wants to win, and he means well, and all this stuff.
He just doesn't know how to.
Boy, is he over-involved, and boy, is he stupid at times. And, you know, you can see it, like, with the way the Bills are run, too. And you know, like, he's involved in that, and he was involved with the Buffalo Buttes and stuff, and now he's not anymore.
Penn State hockey. Vomit.
You know, it's interesting to just see how much, you know, he's playing into the fact that they're not moving forward, because it's not GM BM or whatever his name was. It's not Murray anymore. They got rid of him. It's not
Botterill.
Yeah, it's not all. So who is it? Because
ownership. We talked about this with the Panthers. It's pretty clear at a point when you know it's ownership. You know, it is an ownership problem. And with the Sabres, it's not like Pegula doesn't care and he's not willing to invest. It's, does the owner know what he's doing? Does the owner know how to push the right buttons? Because we know, like, the Lightning are great because of Jeff Vinnick. He knows exactly what he needs to do and knows exactly when to step aside. The best teams in the NHL have that ownership that do that. You know, the Sharks have very good ownership in that way. They will spend, but they stay out of the limelight. You know, Vinny Viola's kind of figuring it out now. We'll see if it works. But ownership matters. Other coaches that were hired, the Oilers hired Dave Tippett. I mean, congratulations to the Edmonton Oilers on hiring Ken Holland and Dave Tippett to... Now, from being in the NHL of 1988, they're in the NHL of 2008. You're still about 10 years behind, but at least you move 20 years in the future.
I was just about to say, at least they can compete in the Western Conference Finals of 2008.
You know who was in the finals that year? That was Detroit and Dallas that year in 2008. So, I mean, maybe it's possible.
Yeah, I know Arizona had a run around
they
there.
They had 2012. It was the year the Panthers made the playoffs. The Coyotes made it to the Western Conference Final, lost in five to the Kings. What a weird year that was. I mean, you have that. I mean, again, it's better than it was. They are at least somewhat thinking like they might not be. But that team has so many bad contracts. It's going to take years to undo that mess. And Connor McDavid is starting to get antsy. And you know what? I'm glad a star player in the NHL is saying, let's get a move on, guys. Let's start winning. As much as I say, like, in the NBA, it's so tilted that the Stars not staying. But, like, a lot of the teams that the Stars go to are still run like garbage, and the Oilers are like that. The best player in the NHL is on its worst run team, and I hope that the Oilers start winning, because Connor McDavid needs to start winning, and that's just better for the league if Connor McDavid's in the playoffs. But the Oilers being a dumpster fire is beautiful, because there is no better Twitter content on hockey Twitter than everyone dunking on the Oilers. It's just so much fun. Now, while I think they're going to be bad, I don't think they're going to be as comically bad as, you know, Peter Chiarelli trading a third-round pick for Alex Petrovich. Shame of it, you know.
I mean, I don't think – but, like, will they do more harmful things? Because, like, I feel like –
they did, you know, they sent Paul Luchik... gone. Craig McTavish is in Russia. They fired the PR guy who was terrible at spinning. They're cleaning the front office.
But it's not like Holland was doing great things at the end of his tenure.
No,
it's not like,
as I said, like, I mean, talked about scale.
Would you give more credit and more leeway right off the hop to Tippett or Holland Like, who are you less? Who do you think is going to be more likely to step in and give a solution?
I want to see what they do this offseason. Like, does Connor McDavid have any help? Because, you know, the whole talk about them is, do they play, you know, Draisaitl and McDavid together? And, I mean, that I want to see what they do this offseason. You need to see, like, what can they get rid of? Do they give Connor any help? You know, that will give me, like, the leeway. But you know what? I think there's a lot of leeway going to be given at Edmonton this year because they're starting from zero. You know what I mean? Like, when you start from zero, everybody gets a free pass. And Holland and Tippett have nothing to do with what's happened before them. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be – I just think that's kind of risky.
If I had to lean anywhere, I think
you don't really
probably lean Holland because he's going to have a lot more leeway to clean up the mess than Dave Tippett. Getting things mixed up again. Maybe Owen Tippett will be traded to the Oilers. I don't know. Who cares? I mean, they need something. But, hey, can we Jesse Puljujarvi to the Panthers for Mike Matheson? I'm still on favor of that.
Klefbom wouldn't be a bad D to get either. I mean, I'm sure there's some –
Klefbom would be fine. Klefbom will be fine. But the Oilers just have to get rid of contracts, so we'll have to see. There was a rumor that we could see a trade between the Canucks and the Oilers for, like, Lucic for Louis Erickson.
Oh, God.
What a great trade that was. Other coaches – the Kings hired McClellan. I've got no idea what's happening there. Apparently, there's rumors that they might be interested in, you know, like a Patrick Marleau trade to get bad contracts off the books. I have no idea what's going on there. McClellan's a good
coach. Dean Lombardi's philosophy is still reigning king, it seems.
Oh, God. So
you know what
bad.
I mean?
Well, he was involved with the Flyers, so, you know. I know, you love that. The Kings are going to be bad for a while. DJ Smith going to Ottawa, first-time head coach. I mean, the Senators are going to be a dumpster fire for a long time. It's going to take a long time to clean that out.
The joke's already been made by a few people. I think someone on Dangle's podcast probably made this joke, but the owner of the Senators was criticizing Toronto for their defense, so that he went out and hired.
It's hilarious. So, but I mean, they don't actually have a bad group of young players, all things considered.
No, it's just Ottawa. It's can they get the people who need to be there to turn it around interested and bought into the team, and happy and willing to stay there and all that stuff.
You
there's
get
just
enough out of Brady Tkachuk, who you know is what it is. Shabbat, of course, and Eric Brandstrom and players like that.
Right. Yeah. Are they even going to want to stay there? Because that's the biggest thing. As much as everyone makes fun of the Senators, what they've done with what they've had is pretty good.
Like,
so
people have said that.
It's not like
it wasn't for the fact that it's the Ottawa Senators and they're awful. Like, people would say if this was just a random team like the Avs, for instance, just picking a team out of a hat, like, they'd be in a really good place just, like, in terms of perception because of all the young players they're putting in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and if they didn't – and, you know, obviously now that – you know, they didn't give up Jack Hughes or Kaapo Kakko. It's not a huge deal.
I mean, like, if they were at four, they would have gotten a better player than they're going to get at 18.
Yeah, but they, you know, they made a decent Duchene trade and that kind of backfills it a bit. And, you know, they're not, it's just.
They are going to have first round
picks. How can
year.
You.
They've got 3 seconds. They're going to be all right.
How can you trust them to do what's right when the guy who wields all the power is constantly making an ass out of himself in the public space and then behind the closed doors they're doing.
It wasn't quite in the same way that Eugene Melnyk effed up. You know what I mean? Like
who wants to play for him? Who wants to? And it's not like Ottawa doesn't have high taxes. It's not like Ottawa is the team doesn't even play in Ottawa. The new stadium project's a mess too. There's gonna be lawsuits and delays and all that shit.
The thing about the Panthers, even though their rank's not in the best place, you're still playing in beautiful Broward County, Florida.
Well, and you know where you're gonna be playing, and you know where, you know, it's not up in the air. There's not some, well, maybe we're going back into LeBreton, or you know, like the that
or we
that
have to be back
area. Maybe we're going,
we move into this new building kind of thing.
Yeah, right. It's you know, you're coming. I mean, right now it's the best Florida's ever looked. You got a great coach. You have a brand new spanking Practice facility going in.
I
It's going to
passed
be
it and just
close by the
walked out,
water.
and yeah, that's going to be retrofitted. It's a cool looking building. I think it's going to do
Right.
well as a practice facility.
Yeah, it's got character, you know? I mean,
There is the benefit of being, in Florida that you don't get. Ottawa, there's always pressure because you're in Canada. In Florida, as I said, like you can go there and the only media you're going to talk to are our friend Jameson and George.
right. I
And
mean, it's.
there's something to be said for players wanting that. And in the NHL, you have the ability to not have that kind of pressure. Like there is internal pressure in Florida, but the media is not going to be on you because the minute like the big four stations show up in your locker room, they're going to ask dumb. There's no pressure put on them. They're not talking on
Let's just say
QAM all the
this.
time
Mike
about Kennedy.
Matheson was never really pressured about anything to do with it. It was never like, I don't think many.
But listen, if
The
we were
word
asking
turnover
questions, we
was
might
not
have
an
done that.
interview.
But we're different kind of people.
You get pretty let off the hook here, and that's, I
Listen, the
guess that's
internal
nice.
pressure's high. Like, let's not say that there isn't any pressure. But we're talking, when you talk external pressure, like media pressure and fan pressure, if the Panthers make the playoffs this year, even though I think they need to win a series, if they make the playoffs this year, they're gold. They're fine in the eyes of most fans because the bar is at the Earth's core. The minute there's a playoff game in that building, and the minute they win a playoff game in that building, and the ice is filled with rats, everyone goes home happy. We still think they got to win a series, and I agree with you, and be contending for the cup. But like, that's the bar in Florida, and the bar in Ottawa is really low. Except there's a lot of pressure to clear that bar, as opposed to the Panthers, where there isn't anything like that. Is there anything else in the world of hockey? I think we've covered it all, other than the final.
I think, we should just,
The
we
final should be
obviously aren't
fun.
experts. We obviously aren't experts on this matter and aren't the voices you should be listening to on this matter, but we definitely are in support of the professional women's players who and their association and union. They just started looking to bring some sort of effective women's league that it works for the players, because right now there's two, and well,
There's
one
one.
really.
And there's one
And
that's trying to work in spite of the
yeah,
pressure,
and
and you got no idea. I'm not an expert on
from
this. I
what
want women's hockey to be successful. The sport needs
right.
women's hockey to be
And
successful. And I
we're both
know,
pro union, so.
oh, well, yes, we're both pro union, but there's also, like, do you want the NHL involved running a women's league? Because it's the NHL. And the answer is, you know what? It's better than what we've had. And the
Yeah, I mean,
NHL,
there's.
I think at a point the NHL is going to have to be involved. And even if it's a loss leader, you're making new fans. Women's hockey makes new fans. And listen, it's hard to create women's professional leagues. I've seen it with the NWSL with soccer, the WNBA. Like, listen, you have to give it a chance. You can't say, no, we're not going to do this. And I think, like, eventually it's going to happen. But, like, we watch the Women's Olympic. Like, that's great stuff. We watched the Women's Worlds, even though, the ending of that was a joke, obviously, because I don't know what the penalty was in that final with Finland, and the sport of women's hockey would have been better if Finland won, even though we're all very much pro-US, Like, I'm rooting for the US women to win the Women's World Cup, obviously, but if the Dutch win, it's probably not bad for women's soccer as a whole. You know what I mean? Like, we'll see what happens with the women's game. I'm going to leave it. There are plenty of good authorities on Twitter who you can go to and look at that. And talk about that, so to speak.
Yeah,
The other thing we
I just think
should
that there's
mention.
just not enough people who aren't players willing to do the right thing. And I honestly don't know if there's enough players willing to do the right thing, because unfortunately it seems that there's enough players interested in just playing and enough players who are interested in
Like, these players are
well.
sacrificing their present for the future, which I can always get behind because it's very volatile.
And that's what it's going to have to take, because unfortunately the people involved in the NWHL and CWHL and people involved in the NHL or the Olympic teams or the national teams, they haven't done anything, and they aren't going to be doing anything. These players I themselves and kind of take all the risks themselves, unfortunately, to get it done.
Yeah,
And I wish them the
there's.
best, because I love watching the NCAA D1 women's teams and on all the action on ESPN Plus. I buy in. I'd be willing to do some
If you were on
that
ESPN
one.
Plus, do you know what you might have seen if you were interested in watching random soccer? me, which I did. Well, this is actually legit true. I did do that. I did call some games at
ESPN Plus. ESPN staff worker, Matt Lichtensauer.
No. It's a production company. I'm not being paid by ESPN, by the way, to promote that. But I'm just saying, like, you would have seen me.
Where's your offer in Connecticut? Where's your office?
No. It was in South Florida where I was working. I can assure you of that. Anyway, quick word on the final before we leave you to your own devices with hockey. Let's talk about the final's been really weird because the Blues have won multiple times this season in this final when the Bruins have been down to 5D. The Blues have been able to respond really well to adversity. Even when it looks like the Bruins are going to take the series over, it just hasn't happened. But I still think Boston's going to come out and win because until a Boston team loses in an event like this, I have no idea how I could even predict them to win because of all the teams they like, even the ones that are not in Boston, owned by Boston people, win freaking titles because the ref's an idiot, doesn't know what a handball is. This is referring to the Champions League final, by the way, which I'm still mad at, and I will always be mad at for the rest of time. But
That was a handball. Can't get this is a handball every time, but go ahead.
Quit it, Crystal Palace fan. Anyway, the point is, listen, I still think
don't
the
Bruins
are going to win. Still think the Bruins are going to win the final. The Blues have responded multiple times pretty well to adversity this postseason. They've done it in the final. The only thing that I've learned about the final is, as I said, this is where my bottom 6 point comes in because the Bruins and the Blues both have really solid bottom sixes that their coaches trust, and the Panthers haven't had that ever. And that's where I'm talking about. Like, you need they've got Noel Achari and, you know, players like that, right? Sean Corrali. The Panthers have guys who could become that. They also have had, like, great postseasons for Marcus Johansson and Charlie Coyle. But the Panthers need guys like that. That's where my bottom six thing came in. The point being, you know, that's where I see it. The Blues have played pretty well. It's funny that Ryan O'Reilly might end up winning the Conn Smythe if the Blues win the Cup. I don't think they're going to, but I'm happy this is a long series. This has been an entertaining series. It's been an interesting series. The thing that I think stylistically that we're noticing is that a really aggressive forecheck, high-energy forecheck from the Blues, that's a style that can work. You know, that's a style that could take speed away in many cases. Now, obviously, the game is still getting smaller and faster, but that forecheck does work. And it's how you blend it in to what you do elsewhere, I think, that's going to be interesting going forward, obviously.
Yeah, I think for me, where I see the differences between the two teams, the Bruins, to me, are a cup contender who've gotten lucky, who have a hot goalie, and are good on paper. And they have it all kind of working for themselves right now. And besides, you know, they get the bounces and things, and they get lucky sometimes when they take stupid penalties and the other team doesn't score and stuff like that, or not getting called for stupid penalties that Marchand takes but doesn't get called for, you know, the whole deal.
Yeah, well, Bruins in games 1 and 3 when they just took dumb penalties, and, I mean, the Bruins were perfect on the power play in game 3. I mean, for me, but also the Bruins are not what you think of the Bruins. You know, the Bruins are a speed team, you know.
But, like, with the Blues, I think they're playing, and I think even the Western Conference Finals, they're playing above their head. I mean, I think this year they had a lot of mojo working for them, and with Bennington and Berube especially, but they're not...
He's been bad in this series. He hasn't been good.
Yeah, that's the only reason they're in the Stanley Cup. I don't think that they're a Stanley Cup team. I don't... The reason they're a Stanley Cup team, and this is something you alluded to, is because in a crazy postseason, their team's best skill is pushback, right? Bennington, after a bad game, he's automatic.
Games 2 and 4 to being bullied in games 1 and 3.
And that's how you make it through that marathon of a playoff, you know, format that the NHL has, is to be really good at that. But I think when you go up a team like Boston, who's good at that and is good on paper and has a hot goalie and has a better coach.
Like, there was a time that I thought last night when the Bruins scored shorthanded and it was 2-2, I'm like, the Blues are going to lose this. They're going to get the soccer phrase I use is killed by the finishing pixie, or killed by expected goals, if you'd like. Rask is going to play out of his mind. The Bruins are going to get a cheap goal and win the game in the third period or overtime, and that's the end of that. They're going to lose in game 5.
But
it hasn't happened that way.
Yeah, every other game the Blues haven't showed up. Some, you know, a lot of games in the playoffs the Blues have just not shown up at,
Like,
and they
there are a
didn't even give
couple of just
themselves a
like complete
chance to
duds
win.
that they've thrown out there, and they've been not great at home, but
And it's hard to win like that. It's hard to win a cup like that. I mean, you can win series, you can get to a Stanley Cup. You know,
especially when you're
Vegas
playing in a year
shows you.
in the Stanley Cup final where the best team you've played on your way here is what? The Sharks, who have no goaltender and were
I would
completely
say
destroyed by.
Boston. Well,
I'm
oh yeah,
talking
on your way to get Dave.
up to Boston in the West.
Yeah, and
They
yeah, and
didn't have
that's
to
what,
play
yeah.
Vegas. They didn't have to play, you
They
know,
had to
even.
play a falling apart Sharks team.
And the Stars
And
were a team that, you know, relied so heavily on Ben Bishop to keep them in. And, you know, like they didn't get to play one of those, like, oh my God teams until the Bruins. Now, I think Boston's still going to win, but, you know,
yeah, I mean, I definitely think so.
The Blues being here is impressive, and I've enjoyed their presence in the final. I've enjoyed Craig Berube, you know, after
It's
he was
good
a
for me
terrible
because
player.
I don't like St. Louis and I don't like Craig Berube, and it looks like they're gonna have a long marriage after this year, and
They're still
you
calling
know,
him old, and their entire
they'll
team
keep Jay
is
Bouwmeester around. It'll be great.
Jay Bouwmeester. Yep. That's my favorite part of this series too, Jay Bouwmeester. Isn't
Yeah,
that funny?
it would be nice if Braden Schenn won a Stanley Cup. I like Schenn. I like Tarasenko enough.
I like Tarasenko. I like some of their other guys that they've got.
But I just don't like the St. Louis Blues. I just can't root for them. And then, you know, taking that away, I don't think they're a team that deserves to win. I think that they've had battles and games where they look like a team that's supposed to win, but I think, you know,
You know what it is? In
they're
another
just kind of
soccer
one of the
analogy,
magic teams this
in another
year, but I
soccer
don't
analogy,
think
when you
magic
play a
teams
team that
deserve to win
presses
either.
like this team does, sometimes that pressing team, if you're playing against another, like with this forecheck, which is so hugely aggressive, it is always on your D and killing them. You know, the Bruins have a much better roster. Like, I've been hugely impressed with obviously Johansson, Charlie Coyle's been really good. You know, as much as we made fun of Don Sweeney for screwing up three straight picks, I mean, still built a pretty dang good team. I mean, it helps when you have Bergeron, Pastrnak, and Marchand, but
And
McAvoy,
Chara, who's not doing too good.
yeah, and Rask has been great this postseason, but Carlo and Grizzly, Connor Clifton, you know what I mean? Like, they've got plenty of young players who are good, and they're not the big bad Bruins that they were under Chiarelli. It's a different Bruins team that's working. And as much as I dislike the Bruins and I dislike a lot of Boston fans, you know. I mean, if you had to have your team be built like the Bruins, I don't think the NHL is going to be in a bad place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the good thing is, if you're listening to Coach Q on Craig Constant's Full 60 podcast through The Athletic, when he was asked like what team and stuff that's, you know, that made the playoffs this year that resembles what he did in Chicago and would what he'd kind of do in Florida, he picked the Bruins.
And
So
listen, that
it's not.
style is replicable. You can play like that. And I'm pretty sure that if the Panthers, they had to fix their D, but they can play like that. And that
Yeah,
is
and
a
you
style
don't
that
have to go
translates really
get.
well, not just regular season, but postseason. And
You
Joel
don't have.
Quenneville will get that out of the Panthers.
You don't have to resurrect Norris, and you don't have to go get P.K. Subban or Erik Karlsson to do that. I mean, you just go get Matt Grizzlick or whatever.
I mean,
You
if
know,
you
like
find a Grizzly
a
Carlo-type D,
Carlo, yeah.
If you can find a guy who can replicate what those two D did, if you could find a guy who can catch lightning in a bottle like a Johansson did, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
You're
and I think
fine.
with the
Because
D, like a
if your
Carlo and
bottom four, if
Johansson, or
your
not
if the fourth
Johansson,
line.
it's easier to do because those are just guys who just play an efficient game, are smart and consistent.
Again, if you're
Where
playing.
it's not like catching lightning in a bottle. It's
Well,
kind of
again, if
just
your
like
fourth
ho hum.
line is next year is Sevier, Hauerluck, and Malgin, and they play the way you know they can play. I know you don't like Colton Sevier, but he actually scored
Well, I
quite well in
mean,
some of these.
I'm just expecting Sheehan and Brouwer
I
too,
know,
so
and
it's
that
just
pisses
like,
me
all
off
right.
too. But if your fourth line is that next year, like that's a reasonably solid fourth line that can do a lot of good things.
Yeah, but you know, it's also a fourth line that I can look at right now and say it might have to get better. And I think that's sort of
But
the
listen,
attitude teams need to have
yeah,
and fans need to have is like.
if they work out the way that they can with the cap, and they're actually going to spend to the cap, they have enough room to make a Johansson Coyle type acquisition at the deadline to get better. And as I said, there's a lot to think about with this team, and the final's been fun. I'm just happy it's going six games, because we haven't had a seventh game in the finals since 2011. I want a seventh game in the Stanley Cup final, because that'll be fun. Great, great viewing experiences. And by the way, all of Canada's just busy watching the Raptors, so.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that. I could care less about Drake, so.
I'm not talking about Drake.
Well, I mean, anything that has to do with the Raptors either gets linked back to Drake or how it helps the Leafs.
Big six. Big 5+1, excuse me. I'm sorry.
There's two things I've heard about the Raptors. It's Drake and being, how does this help the Leafs type stuff. Like, well, because of all the interest in this, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know.
How does it help the Leafs crap is terrible. Can I just say the Raptors are their own thing and they're very enjoyable for what they are? There's nothing wrong with that.
I mean,
of course it's going to happen because it's Canada.
It's a really, really good IndyCar year. And,
you're kind of bored with Mercedes winning everything in Formula One.
As I am.
Are you bored?
Although, I'm bored of that, although I don't think I'll ever be bored of Lewis Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton. So, I like Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, he's a great personality. He's fun, he's not getting tired of winning, though.
Because remember when Max Verstappen was starting to win things, and we're like, oh, maybe?
Yeah, and, you know, he's racing well and everything, and the Honda engine that Red Bull's using is moving along, and they're doing better than they usually do.
Which I'm somewhat interested in. I know Tommy likes a lot. The Canadian Grand Prix is coming up, which is always an interesting race. Yeah, that's always a fun race.
Yep, out on an island.
Literally out on an island in the middle of Montreal. It's a cool place to race, but, you know, I kind of get bored because I'm like, you know what? Hamilton and Bottas winning everything because the car in the end means more than the driver in many ways.
By the end of the summer, it might not be the case because Red Bull always does better at the end of the year. They're better for the tracks
and
at the end of the
year.
And
killing
they've
themselves.
They started better this year than they usually do. So
they're
hopefully
killing
that.
Themselves in Maranello. They're just killing themselves.
Yeah. And it's great because of. The one Ferrari driver wears number 16, and I call him Ferrari Barkov because I like him. Charles Leclerc. Yeah, and since he has a hockey name too, Leclerc.
Yeah, it's not spelled like Leclerc, but it is, yes. Okay, so there's your Formula One update, and the Women's World Cup is starting. U.S., very much interested in seeing how well they do.
They're claiming that's the best team that they've had in a while. So
U.S.? Not quite sure about that. I'd be worried.
That's what they're saying.
I'd be worried about the French. I'm worried about the Dutch. The Dutch are really good. This Dutch team is fantastic. I'm worried about
them. Do you know who I hate more than the French? The Dutch.
Why
that's
do you
awesome,
hate the Dutch? What
that's an awesome powers. That's an awesome powers quote.
I don't care about Austin Powers. Anyway. So,
well, you brought up France and Dutch in soccer, so I feel like that was coming.
Yes, but I watched Ajax completely fall apart in the Champions League final, one of the greatest sporting moments of my life.
That killed me.
That was spectacularly good. Barca signed Frankie de Jong after they collapsed against Liverpool. It's just spectacularly good. Anyway.
And Pogba's might be going to Juventus. So.
Again? Jeez, as they sign Maurizio Sarri. Well, okay, we'll get to that at another point in time.
Juventus needs them. Bye, everyone.
Juve. I hate Juve, by the way. Screw them. This is not going
to
be the last
time. I have to like
Juve
now.
I can guarantee you this. We're going to have a lot to get to. When we start getting trades and draft stuff, we'll get to it. Hopefully, we'll have guests. You're going to get a lot of Y hockey in your ears coming very soon because we're getting to the good
and
stuff.
If Florida does not sign one of Panarin or Bobrovsky and does not get a partner for Ekblad, if at least one of those three things has to happen for me to podcast next year. If they go 0-3 on those three things,
Come on, Panthers.
I'll be a happy fan. I'll still be positive and everything, but I wouldn't be able to podcast. I need that big fresh addition to talk about on the ice every night.
You
know what I mean?
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And also, if they draft Philip Broberg, you'll be podcasting too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that might be the kicker. If they have a good draft, they might be able to at least keep me on the hook a little longer.
Come on, Panthers. I know people from the Florida Panthers follow me, and I tweet about Y hockey.
And if they listen to this podcast, maybe they made it this far.
I don't know if they
This was supposed to be an hour.
This is supposed to be an hour, and it's 2 hours. That's the why I love this Why Hockey podcast. You know, that's what hockey. That's what. Again, where else are you going to get this from? That's what I love about doing this show. Tommy and I have been friends for a while, and we're just, it's a natural. We talk about hockey. We have fun doing it. I can't talk about hockey with anybody else other than this guy like this. And, you know, there's some fun stuff in the pipeline. So enjoy the rest of the final. If other crazy stuff happens, trust me, we'll be podcasting. But we're only 17 days away from the draft. So it's
yeah, happening. So I got to get my fucking article done and put on Rat Trick. Right.
Yeah, read it. I'll be pimping it out as much as I possibly can. Until then, of course, go Max Verstappen, I guess, probably.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Definitely does.